It's the little word where you say I'm cheap. Today I am in joint team with higher education and basic education. And the reason why I'm sitting in higher education is not basic education, because I'm sitting next to the higher education chairperson. The meeting itself will be, we started with a briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training and Basic Education on teacher development. And what I would like to say before we introduce ourselves, that we had a meeting, the two boards for our committee had a joint meeting, and we had higher education present, but it was, I think it was an acting DG at that time. It took place on the 24th of April, or the person was acting in the meeting for the DG. I'm not sure whether higher education had a DG then. And what we looked at was expectations. What do higher education expect from basic education? And what basic education expect from higher education? Because at that time, there were quite a number of challenges. And when it came to the intake of our learners to universities, it was problematic. And we know that when it comes to the subjects within basic education, it was found very problematic by universities. And our decision was after the meeting that basic education should lead the process and have regular meetings with their higher education counterparts. Because we know that when it comes to education, in the past it was one body. But going into 2009, the president split basic education from higher education. And it was just to bring everyone together and to have conversations with each other. Today, we're looking at the training of our teachers, teacher development. When it comes to teacher development itself, we know that the training that we look at to higher education will be the teachers in the foundation phase, our intermediate phase, and our further education and training phase. And when it comes to the development of the teachers itself, you need a certain type of educator when it comes to foundation phase. Because all of us in this committee are educators. We only have one lecturer in our committee. And we know that when it comes to the foundation phase, myself as a high school teacher will not be able to teach those learners. And the same happens perhaps when it comes to primary school. I was trained to teach at a high school, and the same applies to others. So we were picking up contradictions too as a committee when it came to the training of our teachers or development of our teachers. I won't speak to the other partners that we have, because we do have other partners too. And then there was something too that was a bit worrying. When you meet the principal, like I met the principals in Port Elizabeth, and when they spoke traversely, the Funda Lusaka bursary, they tell us that the students coming from the university, although, you know, when you give your reasons the papers, the education they're receiving is good, but I was a bit worried, or we were a bit worried, that when it comes to the subjects like science and mathematics, and I'm not sure whether it is throughout the country, but we know it is within the Eastern Cape, where the principals were complaining that they received students that have life orientation and something else, and not the fair skills. And that was also a worrying factor. And we know we have the department that does development on the one side, and we discussed it with the department in our different meetings when it comes to development, that we don't want these workshops. You know, it must be something longer. And we do have SACE too, that as part of the development, but from the service provider, you know, looking at the presentation of those service providers. So, and then I'm sure the department also has different partnerships, you know, when it comes to the training of our educators. And we felt that today, you know, having a meeting with you to look at teacher development and not interrogate, but question constructively our two departments on what is being done. And then give you a mandate at the end. I'm sure the chairperson of higher education is going to do it, because I would like him to conclude the meeting. And then you'll have homework again, what to do as we go into the future. Because we know that, I always say our minister took a very bold step when she commissioned the investigation into the grade 12 subjects. And we are just waiting now for replies, but to our certain subjects. And we think it's all the work that this committee was doing. You know, by having joint meetings, speaking about basic education as a whole. Normally, I don't speak such a lot as the introduction. You know, because we like going into business. But I thought it would be very good to be very clear about our business today. Everyone knows I am the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, and my name is Honourable Member Hope H. Marker. And then after that, education will introduce himself, and then we'll go over to our members. And once the members are completed, it will be our officials. And once they are completed, then we start with the first leading the delegation. Will be the first one to introduce himself, and then the other people that's in the delegation, according to protocol, deputy DG after that. And then we come to, after all the deputy DGs, then we come, I don't know whether it's chief directors or what. But remember, if you have a deputy DG of higher education, you must introduce yourself after your DG, before we go to the deputy DGs of education. Then and then all the officials from that protocol level, and then our visitors, because normally when it comes to education, we have a lot of visitors. And everyone must be clear who's in the meeting and who is speaking to. Thank you. Over to you, Honourable Member.
I'm Ishmael Malale, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Teaching and Training.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Maggie Mashishi, member of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
I am Ntopile Kanyao. I'm also a member of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. But what is important for all is I come from the Popo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. I'm the member of the Committee Basic Education, both basic and higher. And my name is Harvard Bojani. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Foni Mushwana, member of Basic Education. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Annelie Lopez, and I'm a member of the Higher Education and Training Committee.
Good morning. All, my name is Denise Lamu. I'm a member of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee.
I'm your member.
Good morning. My name is Tripping Gubeni Mzega. I'm the member of the Basic Education Committee.
My name is Crosby Moni. I'm a member of both education committees.
Good morning, Chairperson Koti, Jake, the Kwabo Portfolio Committees, Basic Education and Higher Education and Training. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is William Adisha. I'm with the Basic Education Committee.
My name is Donald Smiles. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Annelie Kapping, is a secretary for the Political Education Training.
Hi. For our research and
content
advice,
at the back. Good morning, Jefferson. My name is Jordan Bobo, researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education.
Good morning, my name is Rampao Mdiva, content advisor for Portfolio Committee on Higher Education Training.
Good morning, my name is Linda McGromler.
Good morning, I'm Dennis Barney, Content Advisor for Basic Education.
And we are called assistant to the committee. I'm handing over to Higher Education, the person leading the delegation.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gwef Konde. I'm the TD of Education and Training. Thank you.
Any DG from BPG, from Basic Education? No one. I mean from Higher Education. From Basic Education.
Good morning, honorable members, DG colleagues. My name is Matanz Mambeli, acting the DG for Curriculum Basic Education. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG, and colleagues. My name is Temba Kojana. I'm the acting DG responsible for the 12th branch in basic education.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Khaled Kitsia, the Director of Initial Teacher Education at the Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, Chairpersons, Honorable Members. My name is Witty Green, Acting Chief Director for Teaching and Learning Development, Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. It's Harun Mohammed, Director for Continuing Professional Teacher Development, Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. And my name is Nadine Pote, Director, Higher Education in Examinations and Assessment.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Members. I am Randall van den Heuver, serving in the Ministry of Education. Basic Education.
There are some two more people that the room to keep themselves to next to Mr. Stefan Garner. Are you from Bangkok? From the Ministry of Higher Education, please. For you, official.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairpersons, also honorable members, colleagues. I'm Nocturne Nova, the PLO from the Office of the Minister for Education and Training.
Good morning, Chairpersons and honorable members. My name is Babuele Bingo, serving in the Minister of Higher Education.
Thanks so much.
Good morning, everyone. Gowina Noor, Secretary to the Chairperson for Basic Education.
Thanks a lot. We read all the visits in that last row there. Oh, they saw education just completely.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Kate and we be in the Resources Department of Education.
Good morning, King and Bolo is senior researcher. I'm in Parliament.
The newspaper there?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Craig Dodds from Independent Newspapers.
Good morning, everyone. I'm
Raja
Azakani
from Parliament Communications.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Kenneth Asensi. I'm with the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Anyone else?
Good morning. My name is Pumola from the Department of Higher Education and Training, PLO.
Good morning. I'm Pat Shaya, Committee Secretary attached to the Constitutional Review Committee.
Thanks a lot for that introduction. Now we know exactly who we're speaking to. I'll hand over to the person leading the delegation. And that is, who?
One more.
Oh, I didn't see.
Somebody hide
it. You must hide, please.
Abonga Kogan, a member of the SAPC.
Good morning, Chair and all members. I'm Viral Patel, and I'm a DA researcher for higher education and basic education.
Thank you,
Good morning. My name is Andy Letoka. I'm representing CBIS Parliamentary Media Alliance.
Thanks a lot. I'll hand over to you, sir, and I'm giving you 3 minutes for the presentation. And then after that, if basic education would like to add anything, they may. But over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning once more to Honourable Member and my colleagues. May I first humbly register the apology of our two ministers, as well as my counterpart, the DG of Basic Education, due to other present commitments. I would like to request Mohammed and Dr. Green to lead us in the presentation, as per the request of these members of the two committees.
Thank you very much, and good morning once again to the Honourable Chair and all the members. The presentation is based on the Integrated Strategic Planning Framework for Teacher Education and Development, which was developed after 2009 when we had a summit with all the stakeholders in education based on a recognition that there were considerable challenges in the field of teacher education and development. The structure of the presentation is, as indicated on the slide there. For purposes of time saving, I'll just proceed to the next one. The ISPFTED, it's an acronym for what I've just said is the planning framework, is a comprehensive plan to improve teacher education and development in the country, developed, as I indicated, by education stakeholders, with implementation driven jointly by Department of Basic Education, Department of Higher Education and Training. Some of the key objectives of the framework are to ensure that the teacher education system provides sufficient numbers of high-quality new teachers to the system, that practicing teachers receive targeted development and support designed to improve the quality of teachers' work in key subject areas and in schools in ways that lead to improvement in learner results. We'll speak more about those in later slides. We have a number of formal structures that have been activated to enable both the departments to collaborate on the implementation of the framework, and these include a National Teacher Education and Development Committee, which did not exist before 2011, when both ministers released the document officially for implementation. We are in the process of completing the establishment of provincial teaching education and development committees, which also did not exist before 2011. And we also have a structure coordinating between national, CDE and DF, and provinces, which is HEDCOM subcommittees. We have a number of bilateral between the two departments to coordinate all of the work. We have a joint qualifications evaluation committee between the two departments. We have a DBE, DHET,
is Fasfunza Shaka Bursary Advisory Committee, and we have a joint National Teacher Education Qualifications Evaluation Committee, which is several processes. In keeping with our spirit of collaboration, we will now hand over to Dr. Green for the next slide.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Arun. We thought it would be important as we started this presentation just to signal that there is strong collaboration between the two departments around teacher education development issues, which is often pointed out as a weakness as a result of the split of the former Department of Education and Education of two new departments. So if we can set up a structure that collaborates strongly together, we overcome that inherent possible or potential weakness, and then we are more able to draw the strengths of a split like this. Because what in effect it does allow is for the two departments to draw on different resources and different levers in the system to actually strengthen teacher education and development. That can only happen successfully though if we have these collaborative structures in place. We thought we'd move to look and try and build a context in which our presentation is based, looking at the teacher education and development continuum, which is what framed the integrated strategic planning framework for teacher education and development. The understanding is that we have a continuum for teacher education and development that starts right from the point of recruitment and advocacy around teaching as a profession and moves through initial teacher education, teacher uptake and deployment in schools, the issue of teacher induction, so that the graduates that are coming out of universities are supported strongly to take up teaching positions in schools, and in continuing professional development through a lifelong learning approach as teachers evolve in their careers. So it's this kind of continuum that has to focus and frame the work around teacher education and development. What the summit did highlight was that there were several challenges that a well-being experience in relation to these different components. And if you don't have a color presentation, hard copy, then this presentation on the TV is to show the colors that relate to each of these areas. So in terms of recruitment and advocacy, a big challenge was related to the low status of the profession. The fact that it wasn't attractive to highly able new leavers, new school leavers. Insufficient new teachers being produced to meet certain requirements related to the issue of recruitment and advocacy. In relation to initial teacher education, two main challenges presented themselves. The one was around quantity, and the other was around quality. So the quantity of teachers that we are producing in relation to the numbers that were needed in the schooling system. And in quality in relation to how prepared those teachers are to take up positions in schools and to respond effectively to the demands of schooling. But the quality-quantity issue has to be firmly foregrounded in the work that we're doing. In relation to teacher uptake and deployment, it becomes clear that you need a much more nuanced understanding of teacher supply and demand. It can't just be about numbers, about growing teacher education to produce more graduates. It really has to be understood in a nuanced fashion what type of teachers, with what subject specializations, in what areas, for which schools. It's a much more nuanced approach that we have to take in relation to addressing the issue. The issue of induction is really an important one, and I think it lies at the heart of many of the criticisms that are being made around new graduates not being able to operate effectively in schools. I'm not trying to deny that there are no problems within the higher education system in terms of the kind of teachers being produced, but there's also an issue around how are we supporting new teachers as they come into the schooling system to be able to take up their position effectively, rather than just adopt a sink or swim attitude. Continuing professional development, again, the concerns about the quality of continuing professional development programs. The recent NEED report pointed to a slippage between qualifications and competence. The fact that we have so many teachers now being qualified on paper, they are at RQB 13 or at RQB 14, but we're not seeing the rollover effect into schooling and impact on teaching and learning. The lack of support to teachers at the local level, teachers' poor subject knowledge and pedagogic knowledge has been highlighted. And when I say teachers, I don't want to be pointing fingers and making teachers seem to be the devil in disguise in this whole context that we're in. Poor subject and content knowledge is really a result of many factors, and not all the blame of the teacher himself or herself. And a weak system to identify systemic development needs in the teacher education system, as well as the individual development needs of teachers. We tend to take a broad brush stroke approach, and a one-size-fits-all approach has been the order of the day, and we need to actually be much more nuanced than that. So if you look at the right-hand side of the slide, you can see how the integrated strategic planning framework picks these challenges up in relation to the outputs that that framework is working towards. Output one is individual and systemic teacher development needs are identified and addressed, right? And a number of activities being implemented to drive that output. Output two is an output around increasing the numbers of high-achieving school leavers that want to and opt to and choose to take teaching as a profession rather than think it as a default situation because there's nothing else that they can do. The recruitment campaign and the Punjab Child Protection Scheme are important levers in that regard. Output B, teacher support is enhanced at the local level, so to provide structures at the local level to support teachers, for example, through district teacher development centers and communities of practice for teachers to be involved. Output 4 is an expanded and accessible formal teacher education system established that is able to produce both the numbers as well as the types of teachers that the system needs. The next part of the presentation really hones in on the issue of initial teacher education. And it's related to Output 4, developing this expanded and accessible formal teacher education system.
The system of higher education, we want silence in the system. You want to speak to someone? I want to speak to my friend, like that. Or else, you will be outside. I continue first.
Thank you, Jefferson.
Some of us, some 12 wrong copies.
We have just stopped the meeting for a while. It's going to be the right copies to me. So we'll just...
mostly public, but we do have an increasing number of private higher education institutions indicating interest and becoming involved in the sector. Teaching is a graduate career, and we know that there are two pathways to become a teacher currently. The one is the Bachelor of Education pathway, which if you did it full time, it would take you 4 years, and you'd emerge with the Bachelor of Education degree, which would covers the content as well as the pedagogical competence. The other pathway is through an undergraduate degree or diploma, a general degree like a Bachelor of Science or Bachelor of Arts, or diploma in arts or languages, and you cap that with a postgraduate certificate in education. Okay, if you did that full time, it would also take you 4 years, and you come out with two qualifications, an undergraduate degree plus a postgraduate certificate. Where the undergraduate degree deals with the issues of discipline and content, and the capping qualification deals with the issues of education and pedagogy. Through both of these pathways, teachers can specialize either as foundation phase teachers, intermediate phase teachers, senior phase, and FET teachers. At present, we have 21 universities in the country that offer initial teacher education out of the 23 that currently exist. The two that do not offer at present are the Vaal University of Technology and the Mangosuthu University of Technology. Vaal University of Technology is going to become involved. You'll see later that the department is supporting them to become involved in teacher education. They will be starting to offer teacher education from next year. There are no plans at present for Mangosuthu University of Technology to become involved in the area. The two new universities that country is working to establish, one in the Mpumalanga province and the other in the Northern Cape, will both offer the full suite of teacher education qualifications. So that's the kind of landscape that we have at present. I thought it would be important to give you an indication of the efforts that have been put into initial teacher education over the last few years and the fruits that these are starting to bear. And we can look at numbers here. Look at the number of graduates that are being produced in the system. It is since 2008 where we've had an intensive focus on teacher education in the country. The National Policy Framework for Teacher Education and Development was published and gazetted in 2007, and it provided a kind of guideline around what we needed to do. And it initiated a large number of activities in teacher education, including, importantly, the Funza Lushaka Bursary Scheme. So you can see the growth that this has been able to drive, this and other activities in teacher education. Where in 2008, we had 35,000 headcount enrollments in teacher education programs, initial teacher education. By 2011, that has doubled to 79,000 headcount enrollments. Where in 2008, we had just under 6,000 new teachers exiting the system annually. This has almost doubled to 10,593 in 2011. So a huge increase in production of new teachers. And this is likely to increase as we go through the next years. We do know unaudited figures for 2012 are showing that we're likely to exceed 12,500 new teachers in 2012. Projections show that we are likely to exceed 14,000 new teachers by 2014. We are engaged in a new enrollment planning cycle with universities, and that is indicating that we'll reach 20,000 new teachers annually by 2019. So we're well on track in terms of better meeting the supply-demand gap. We have to turn our attention to the issues of quality and the nature of the teachers. The next slide provides you with an indication of the supply-demand gap. And I must draw your attention to how the slide is presented is both at the national level, SA, meaning South Africa, and then for each province, working on the number of teachers in service in 2011. And in basically this is a 4.5% attrition rate. Now we know that it might be contested, that in fact the Department of Basic Education does publish lower attrition rates than that. This attrition rate really is drawn from an average of report research studies as well as inflated substantially because it's a very basic analysis that is just looking at attrition rates. We know that there are many other factors that impact on teacher supply and demand, not only attrition rates. So a slightly inflated attrition rate would give us a cushion of actually more. We're projecting a bigger supply-demand gap than is actually the case if we use the example of attrition rate. Right? And if we did that, so let's just say for argument's sake we did that, and we worked out the number of teachers needed, you'll see that it comes to, just based on attrition, 18,800 teachers nationally, and this aggregated across the provinces like that. The fourth column shows you the number of teachers that he produced in each of those provinces, just taking universities in those provinces as suppliers. Now, we know that our universities are not just provincial suppliers, they're also national suppliers, they're national institutions. So it's not completely true that all the graduates of that university were teaching in that province. More true of some than others. But if we just project, very simplistic analysis, it starts to give us trends rather than actual figures. Where are the challenges in relation to teacher supply and demand? So you can see we have quite a substantial challenge at the national level still. Right? A gap between supply and demand if we just wanted to meet attrition. It disaggregates differently across the provinces. So we can see in provinces like the Western Cape, the demand, the supply-demand gap seems to be much smaller. Right? Provinces like the Northern Cape, like Northwest Province, like the Three States. But there are provinces that are highlighted in red, where the supply-demand gap seems to be much larger. Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo Province, Mpumalanga Province, and Gauteng. That's five provinces that seem to display a large teacher demand gap, and we need to put in place procedures to address it. Gauteng appears to be an anomaly, because the other day, the MEC for Education did indicate that Gauteng wasn't experiencing a major problem in terms of sourcing teachers. And I think it's really because the supply demand issue is masked in Gauteng, that Gauteng is able to attract and draw teachers from other provinces to meet its teacher needs. And it exacerbates the issue of supplying in the other provinces. So we have to grow teacher education in Gauteng still, so that we have teachers being produced in Gauteng who are able to take up a position in Gauteng. But you'll see that those five provinces there have been highlighted for major intervention as we move into the future. So what did the DHET do in terms of the teacher supply demand gap? We have implemented, in line with the integrated strategic planning framework, a three-step process, where these three steps are both sequential as well as overlapping. They follow logically one on the other, but you're not waiting to complete one before we start the other. And the three steps are to expand initial teacher education enrollment at existing universities, to push existing universities to maximally enroll students in teacher education, provided that they can accommodate, support, and deliver a quality service to those students. Right? The next step is to expand existing capacity. So to look at the universities and to understand, can we expand, for example, infrastructure, residences, staffing at this university to support great intake of students, is the second step. And the third step is to establish new teacher education campuses. And the strategies are being translated at present into a detailed operational plan for each of the provinces that will provide us with a nuanced picture of the supply-demand scenario in each province. I want to unpack those three strategies a little more just to give you some taste of the meat underneath them. So in relation to pushing universities to enroll maximally, provided they can support the students, we are entering into a new five-year enrollment planning cycle, where the Department of Higher Education and Training interacts with each of the universities in the country around their enrollment plan and what students will be supported by the departments through subsidy funding in terms of enrollments. Teacher education is one of the critical areas that have been highlighted in the enrollment planning cycle in conjunction with medicine, with engineering, etc. So we are meeting, and the meetings are actually ongoing now, from this week, meeting individual institutions and negotiating with them around where we'd like to see the way around these areas and pushing teacher education. So the first engagement with the universities is happening, and the first engagement seems to be showing that we will be able to push the system as it currently exists to produce 20 to 22,000 new teachers by 2019. We will very, very close then to addressing the teacher supply demand gap in the country. Given that learner enrollment is projected over the next while, to 2030 in fact, to actually remain stable or even decline according to the National Development Plan, this number of teachers is likely to be the number of teachers that we are needing to be producing in the system. The next slide, sorry about the small text, gives you a sense of funding that becomes into institutions to support teacher education specifically. Now we have a funding grant in the system called Infrastructure and Efficiency Grant that is given to universities to improve infrastructure at the universities. And again, within that grant, teacher education is ring-fenced as a critical area. In the cycle that invites at present, $670 million was allocated to teacher education to improve facilities at universities. And you can see, I've given you a sense of the 18 universities that are being supported in this cycle and what's actually being supported at those universities. And you'll see it largely around improving buildings, increasing capacity. The next slide talks the second step in the strategy, the third step in the strategy, which is developing new campuses. And you'll see then those five provinces that are highlighted in that slide where we have the major teacher demand gap. These are the provinces where we have to focus on much more bigger expansion, developing new campuses for teacher education. So in Mpumalanga province, the Sibuswa Teacher Education Campus was launched this year. I'm sure you saw that in the news. It's the first of these new campuses. The former Ndebele College of Education has been taken over and reopened as a site for teacher education in partnership with the University of Johannesburg. This campus will be taken over by the new university as soon as it's promulgated later this year, and it will become a campus of the new university in Mpumalanga province. We're aiming for an enrollment of between 1,500 and 3,000. We're still in the process of understanding the infrastructure requirements that will be required and where we can push it to. It won't be less than 1,500, won't exceed 3,000. In the Eastern Cape, the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University is being supported to establish educational Mission Vale campus, which is a campus outside of Port Elizabeth in one of the townships. In KwaZulu-Natal, we're currently involved in conducting a feasibility study, which we hope is going to lead to the development of a business plan that will allow us to utilize the former Amzumkulu College of Education, a site as a new teacher education campus, possibly linked to Durban University of Technology. So that's KwaZulu-Natal's strategy presence. In Limpopo province, we have just had a meeting with the NECD, who has given us the go-ahead to utilize the former Sekakuni College of Education as well as the Giani College of Education as possible new teacher education sites. We have a site visit scheduled for the 1st of July to Sekakuni at the University of Limpopo to look at that possibility and to take that further. And in Gauteng, the strategy in place at present is to bring VUT on board and to develop a strong teacher education profile for the VAR University of Technology on the Sebokeng campus. I must highlight the strong risk here, that while these are necessary and while there's a strong push to utilize the former teacher education colleges, this is resource intensive and it's going to need funding. And if we aren't able to get funding, it really hamstrings the effort to reutilize these new campuses. So funding from the fiscus will be absolutely essential. Ring-fence funding for this specific purpose will be absolutely essential. So I think in terms of the quantity issue, pushing the system towards improving numbers of teachers. What about the quality issue? This is an important thing that we have to address. So while the system is improving outputs, the issue of throughput in teacher education, the number of people we're taking in versus the numbers that finally finish, is an area of concern and is something that we have to address. So we have an attrition rate in initial teacher education that is minimizing the efficiency of the system. We also hear a lot about the quality of the teachers that are being produced, largely based on anecdotal evidence. What principals say, what practicing teachers say, what department officials say about the capability of the new teachers coming into the system. I don't want to disregard that because I think it is important. But what I think we do need to do is to move towards an evidence-based approach, to gather evidence on what exactly are the issues and then to, on the basis of that evidence, put in place measures to address that. I don't think we must move towards a situation where we throw the babies out of the bathwater again in relation to teacher education. We have to work with what we've got and improve it. This kind of swing that we have in teacher education is really expensive for the country, and we have to work in a much more consolidated fashion. The issue of flipping between qualification, there's people coming out of qualification, but are they competent, is something we have to investigate much more strongly. And I like what the chairperson said initially, that the situation is probably not the same across all institutions in the country. And the research that we do will point out where the issues are. So the new research is already pointing to that. The poor content knowledge, the pedagogical knowledge for teaching, the practical knowledge. Right? The statement about the system and teachers generally, not just about initial teachers. We do know that we have a foundation-based teacher education system that needs strengthening substantially. We have had a huge difficulty attracting African language school leavers to become foundation-based teachers. We wrote a paper on it. If I showed you the numbers that were actually produced in that year that we investigated, it would actually be very shocking and depressing. And so the department has implemented a strengthening foundation-based teacher education program to deal with this issue. So how are we dealing with it? With it then? What do we need to do? One of the ways is intentionally clearing another grant in the system, the teaching development grants. There's this fund in the system that university is using different ways. What we want to do is to develop a policy that regulates the use of that grant and steers it towards issues of quality. So we are seeing quality issues, not just in teacher education, in all areas of education and universities, to steer the use of that grant to focus on those areas and to strengthen those areas. It's one of the strategies. The other strategy I've just mentioned is to strengthen foundation-based teacher education. I'm sure you are aware of the EU-supported primary education sector policy support program. A component of that, to the tune of 141 billion, has been dedicated to strengthening foundation-based teacher education. And we have a number of projects across the country where teacher education for the foundation phase is being grown. When we started, 13 universities were offering foundation-based teacher education. We're now at the point where 20 universities are involved in developing programs for foundation-based teacher education, with the specific focus on developing teachers to teach in African languages and to teach the African languages. That's a kind of new focus. We have developed and implemented a new teacher education qualification policy, the minimum requirements for teacher education qualifications. It has replaced the norms and standards. The focus on the norms and standards were on roles and competences and outcomes-based approach. This policy embraces that, but also foregrounds the issue of teacher knowledge and teacher practice. And it puts specific requirements in place around the kind of knowledge that new teachers have to develop and the kind of pedagogical competence, the practice that they have to develop. A policy that drives the quality issue is in place, and we're working to implement the policy and ensure that there's institutional adherence to the policy. A further strategy is to enhance the practice teaching component, because this, I think, is where major weaknesses. What happens when teachers go out on school experience? The proposal is to develop professional practice schools and teaching schools. So teaching schools attached to universities that work like teaching hospitals attached to medical universities. So we have a teaching school, a primary teaching school, and a secondary teaching school attached to a university where the first dips into practice happen. And then a network of practice schools, professional practice schools across the country where the more elaborated and extended professional practice happens. Funded schools fitting particular norms and standards who understand that one of their functions is to help the country to produce teachers is a major step. Currently, we have two research projects undergo, investigating what it's going to take to establish these kind of schools. The financial frameworks, the legal frameworks, the policy frameworks, and all of that. Those research projects are due to terminate at the end of this year, and that will inform the way forward for that activity. And then the final one, we have a research study undergo in partnership with JET. Dr. Nick Taylor was also part of the need, but he's also heading this project. And this project is actually investigating what is happening in teacher education, in initial teacher education in the country. So it's looking at what's happening on the exercise in the program with the students, and then it's following about 100 students as they leave their fourth year, they're in fourth year this year. So as they leave their fourth year and go into schools next year, it will follow them for 2 years to understand what are the issues around the ability to be responsive to practice, and that will inform further set of strategies around improving quality of teachers. Colleagues, in a nutshell, that is...
Are you going to do the continuing professional development?
Mr. Mohammed will do that.
Fine. Mr. Mohammed, just speak with, because I'll give you now 10 minutes, but linger a bit with inclusive education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As indicated, we now move to the continuing professional development programs that are run by the Department of Education. There are 9 priorities that we selected for presentation. Now, 2 more activities that we are engaging with you to reflect them here, and they are as listed there. As Chairperson is indicating, I'll concentrate on number 5. Move through this quickly. CAP 7O is the major program of the department, and for this year, we've got targeted senior phase teachers and grade 12 teachers who need to be orientated and prepared for implementation next year. Subject advisor training is done, and we've discussed the provinces for the orientation of teachers. That program will commence from the end of this month. But just to give you a quick background, we've covered over 270,000 teachers in the last 2 years who went to foundation phase, intermediate phase, grade 10 and 11. Then we put a lot of emphasis on the use of the annual national assessment and national CS certificate diagnostic reports which the department has been producing. These are detailed item analysis, bits of information which the teachers get upon which to base their teaching and learning programs. As you saw last year, we posted some significant improvement in the foundation phase and in the languages. And although the maths improvement was small, it was an improvement from previous year's performance of them. So we're pressing the system quite hard for teachers to be supported by provincial departments to use these documents to inform teaching and classroom practice. Then, as you know, we've distributed quite a vast number of workbooks through the system, and a number of teachers were indicating to us that they needed support. So the department produced a teacher guide, and we've just completed the distribution of 400,000 copies of these via district offices, and the Department of Basic Education will take responsibility for training of subject advisors on that. In the initial part of this presentation, we indicated that at the moment, our system to identify individual teacher development needs and to address them is not as strong as it needs to be. We've got an ICMS system which has strengths but it has a number of limitations. And so in the teacher development framework, it was agreed that we need to put our teachers through diagnostic assessments. The department has just completed the first test items for mathematics in all 4 phases. They'll be going through sort of pilot process in the next few months. And they're also targeting to complete test items for teachers for English first edition language by the end of August, with a target date of introducing it to the system incrementally from next year. The next item, I'm going faster than, okay, is the development of provincial teacher development institutes. We mentioned that in the 2009 summit, we identified that support to teachers at the local level is not also a strong feature of our system. So as it stands, we've got 5 provinces that have got provincial teacher development institutes. Western Cape, Gauteng, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KZN, all in varying degrees of operation. And recently, Free State and Northern Cape have begun with setting up these provincial teacher development institutes. Northern Cape and Free State have indicated that they're tying it with HEI processes. Then the departments entered into a collaboration with UNITA and other partners, and there's an allocation of 97 million rand in the collaboration between UNITA and DHET. 45 teacher centers of the 112 we have in the country have been identified for strengthening in the course of the next 3 years. With the UNITA collaboration, we've identified 10 centers. We've opted to go slowly to make sure that they are consolidated improvements in those centers and they roll out more strongly as we proceed. Vodacom has already established 9 ICT-enabled centers in each of the provinces. They've committed to another 30. We've just agreed with provinces for 20 centers to be identified in 20 districts which are part of the Race to the Top program. And then Cisco has come in with a commitment to support 10 of these centers. So all in all, in 2013, we're projecting that 49 centers will be in a far stronger position than they were at the beginning of 2013. Moving on to English first edition language, as has been indicated, it's one of the weaknesses of our system. The majority of our learners are taught in English and are examined in English. And if you look at the ANA and the NSET results, you see many of the difficulties result from teachers' poor competence in English. So we've embarked on a strong program in collaboration with British Council. We trained 120 subject advisors and 20 HEI specialists last year. and 100,000 foundation phase teachers are targeted over the course of last year, this year, and next year to be completed. And we're doing similar work in intermediate phase, senior phase, and FET as a rollout, and all teachers will then be targeted for that program. Jefferson asked us to focus on inclusive education, so let me just give some elaboration on that. The department has produced a three-year HRD plan, which has three main components. One is teaching teachers and enabling schools to differentiate the curriculum for the categories of special needs and categories of disability we have in our system. So we're targeting to have at least one teacher in all of our 25,000 schools by the end of 2015 to be equipped to be able to do this work, to be a champion in each of the schools. Similarly, for screen identification assessment and support, in other words, the ability to identify learners with particular learning needs, is a skill which is in short supply in our system, and we're expecting those champions in the schools to be able to do that. So a massive rollout program, identification of specialists, we're able to train subject advisors and specialists in district offices, and then moving through to schools is also underway. And the third leg of that process is a dedicated program for the categories of disability, namely schools of the blind, the 22 schools, the schools of the deaf, all of them, and the other categories of disability. Honourable members and chairperson, I just need to indicate as someone who works very closely with this process, it's taken us a long time to get the training for the teachers of the blind off the ground, because it's not something that is concretized in our system. The HIs, for example, there's not very many who offer these programs. Most of this work has been done by the NGO and the sector itself, and we've succeeded so far in bringing all of them together to put together credible programs, and we have to say that we have finally pushed the process, and the School of the Blind has participated so far in two programs last year, and there will be another two programs this year, and we're looking at similar processes of acceleration in the other categories of disability. And moving on to the teacher union collaboration, I think we did report on those before. We're in year three of the program now. Year two was completed at the end of the financial year. And we're also glad to say after a very rough start in year one, we've completed 58,000 teachers who have participated in this training through all 5 unions. And to indicate an interesting point of fact, 3 of the unions were really struggling in the beginning, but we succeeded in supporting them to build capacity, and all of them are now rolling smoothly with the program. The next program is the program which we deal with SACE, the CPTD management system. A status report on all the development work that was done in the last 5 years was completed last year, and we've agreed with SACE that during the course of this year, all principals and deputy principals will be signed up for participation in the point system which is going to be introduced from the beginning of next year. In other words, every single teacher will be expected to complete 150 points worth of professional development over the 3-year cycle. So principals and deputy principals will begin with that process next year. Heads of departments will be signed up in 2014 and will participate in the program from 2015 onwards in the 3 years to follow, and teachers will then follow in 2015 and participate in the program from 2016 onwards in a 3-year cycle. With regard to setting up of the National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development, we've just appointed contact staff to develop the ICT system. So, one of the commitments in the development framework is that as a system, we are underutilizing the capacity of ICT to reach teachers effectively. And so, by the end of this year, we're targeting to have that system fully operational with the teacher centers as being a focus for the delivery of that. And we're hoping then teachers will be able to participate in the teacher diagnostic assessment, which I spoke about earlier, through that process. And then lastly, we are aware that one of the issues that has been raised in some of the structures is that although there's a lot of work being done around teacher development, it's not being discussed sufficiently, it's not known sufficiently in the system. So one of the commitments we've made is the development of a living catalogue of all the courses and programs that are available to teachers with a view to advocating that they make it easy for teachers to have access to activities. So before I indicate the difficulty that we have here, is our provinces do a fair amount of work. A fair amount of work needs to be done by DDE and DDS. But it appears as though it's not widely enough known. This is about addressing the advocacy challenges. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. I'll just hand over to the DG in case there's something you'd like to add, and any one of the two deputy DG of Faith Education. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. No, this is the full account of the work that we are doing, and the presentations are reflecting what we're actually doing in the system through collaborative efforts with a view of meeting the demands of the country so far as future education and training is concerned. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I think in the opening remarks, you raised quite a number of questions, which I think as a process issues, we are able to reflect on them around the quality of the new teachers, what programs are in place, what is it that we are going to do in terms of that. The other aspect that we needed to look into very, very strongly, what are the areas of demand? This will be able to do through a proper teacher profiling exercise. And I think we've also been able to reflect on who are the stakeholders and their different roles and responsibilities in that regard. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the two departments, our education and basic education, for this report. It's a very comprehensive and very interesting report. I don't think, you know, we expected it will be so sad as the one that you're giving to us. And we really appreciate it. But I'll hand over to our members to ask questions on this report. Because only through interrogating it that we're able to enhance it even more. Thank you. Honourable members. I'll start with the Honourable Mashuana, and we come down. And then, of course, everyone is going to ask the question, I know it. And then we with the Honourable Lockett. And we go straight along, and I think the last person will be Honourable Madisha, which I know is going to be from everyone. Is that just, yeah, any questions, please?
What you're expecting from that one person. and what are the practical issues around that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairpersons. I must first thank both of my chairpersons for having convened this meeting, which I regard as the meeting about teachers. Higher education. Our constant, when I say our, I mean we for specific education, in our absence, our complaint has always been this one, that our learners are continuing to be badly taught, and you are responsible for producing teachers or teaching our learners. I would like to hear more of the challenges that are there. Not so much the quantity, but the quality. What is happening? Why is our education in the classroom? What is happening? Is it because our teachers, look, we receive a report from Malusi. Malusi will say, well, some of our teachers lack sufficient subject knowledge. They let this, you go to the National Development Plan, the same thing. My question is, has always been, this initial teacher training, will you continue using or train our teachers through distant means? I've observed a teaching at UNISA there. From the metric to that institution, no lecturers, backer schools, and many of our students also have trained through these different colleges, FESA and CERASI. And hence, this level of sufficient, or even you admitted this in this document, that they lack that is pedagogic knowledge. You can just imagine a trained teacher lacking pedagogic knowledge. I can't just imagine that one. I'm a teacher. I don't think I lack that pedagogic understanding and knowledge. But he's saying he's tough with this. But that is my my theme teaching, do we continue training our teachers through different means? This would be suitable for postgraduate teachers, you know, but for initial teacher training, I don't think is doing any. And as a chair, I hear this disjointed effort. There's a college there being opened there, and Mzimkulu, there's another one there. It doesn't seem to be a coordinated strategy of opening up these teacher colleges, especially for foundation phase. What is your coordinated strategy? Not as Mzimkulu and something else somewhere. Please let us hear your coordinated strategy. I know you mean well, but you have to hear from us that we seem not to be satisfied with what is being offered currently.
Thank you. Thank
you, Chairperson. My first question is about people who produce or who help produce artisans from FET colleges. As we were speaking of teachers here, teachers, I don't hear anything about the training of people who are responsible for the training of artisans in this country before actually they take up apprenticeship, because apprenticeship obviously will be in the private sector. I'm not interested in that one, but I'm interested in before they go to apprenticeship.
not heard anything about people who are responsible in the FET colleges. Maybe it is because some people call them lecturers, some still regard them as teachers, so we don't know. If you can get some clarity there as to who are these people, are they lecturers or teachers, and if they are lecturers, where do they train? Because I hear from this I learn, you know, you speak of degrees, but in the FET colleges, the sections, I'm more interested in the technical, because you have been hearing the commercial sections and other sections, but now the technical, because this country has a big problem with regard to artists and training. So my interest is more in artists and training. Are they lecturers? Are they teachers? Would they train? And so on. Just to give us a better picture there. There are many questions that one can ask about, but if you can only cover this, I'll be satisfied. Thank you.
Thanks, and just add on the professional qualification there, because in the past when it came to the arts and lecturing, they didn't have the professional like the teachers, and what are you doing about it? Thank you. Honourable, I can't think of your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think I'll waste time because I wanted to ask questions about the teacher education campuses. And then Comrade Mishra have already asked questions about the time frame. And then maybe to indicate that I'm happy that in Limpopo you consider the College of Education and the Gian, we were complaining about the opening these teacher education campuses. And then maybe let's come to my question on page 13, where you talk about, the question was about quality in teacher education. You talk about the research study that indicated challenges linked to poor teacher knowledge. I just want to know, when are you going to assist, because it indicates that this is not a statement about new teachers. So it reflects teachers in the BE system generally. When are you going to answer this question? Lastly, on slide 14, I just want to get clarity when you talk about the research study on enhancing the practice teaching component of teachers' education program through the establishment of teaching schools and professional practice schools. I just want to clarify that on that one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Object.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yes, thank you for the report, and emphasis has been placed on increasing the supply of teachers and also the allocation of additional infrastructure resources and so forth. But what I find missing is the fact that we have to look at the actual trainers of the teachers at the universities or at the education campuses. I've trained teachers for many, many years, and a lot depends on the actual quality of the lecturers, the trainers of those teachers. So are there any plans in your discussions with universities offering these courses, looking at the quality of the courses on the one hand, but also where are we going to get all the lecturers for these increased numbers of students going to do teacher training? Because it has to be stressed that, and I think it's also ties in with a point made earlier about distance education for teachers, that you can have a class of 400 or 500 students doing teacher training. However, it's not effective. The real training is where you do the one-on-one with a student in a practical class situation. That is where they are really taught how to teach. Now that ties into the next question I have, and that is also about these professional teaching schools. If you could perhaps elaborate on that, do you intend establishing these schools, in other words, it's sort of a simulated experience for students, or are you actually going to look at existing schools, adopt those schools, that universities adopt those schools, because then students will at least have experience of real-life situations, children coming from the real-life experiences at home, and not in an almost simulated fashion. And then lastly, I'm really glad that you focus on inclusive education as well. I do have a serious concern, and I hope that this will be addressed. In School for the Deaf, My experience has been that most of those teachers are not proficient in South African Sign Language, and it is a major disservice to children who are deaf, who have to be taught by teachers who cannot even converse with them in South African Sign Language. Is that part of your planning? Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And yes, indeed, it was a very, very interesting presentation, which gives rise to many, many questions. I want to start with recruitment. I want to start with recruitment. Slide 7 shows the headcount versus the graduates, the enrollment headcount versus the graduates, and it is shocking. The dropout rate is shocking. Or the rate of those who do not ultimately graduate. I do not see, and particularly within the Funzelashaka Bursary scheme, but generally within attracting teachers to the teaching profession, attracting aspirant teachers, I do not see a move to attract really competent teachers. We know that the top countries that perform in the top 10 worldwide, internationally, in the education sector, like Finland, like South Korea, target the top academic cohort and technical efforts for technical schools, etc. But certainly they target the top cohort of students. In the old days, you will know that that learners used to have to go through at least 3 interviews before they were accepted for teacher training. No longer is that the case. So I'm very concerned that we are not targeting the right kind of young people to become teachers. I mean, the fact was alluded to, or the situation was alluded to, when it was mentioned that teachers shouldn't enter, or young people shouldn't enter this profession just for something to study or something to do because they don't know what else to do. They really must be aspirant teachers, but they must be young people who can be capable of becoming good teachers. So I'd like to know your plans on teacher recruitment. So even before we go into the universities, how are you going to make sure that we recruit the right candidates? I've got in front of me your policy that you were referring to. Appendix C is headed Basic Competences of a Beginner Teacher. And number one is that newly qualified teachers must have sound subject knowledge. And number two is newly qualified teachers must know how to teach their subjects and know how to select, determine the sequence and the pace, content, etc., etc. Now, surely, if this is in a policy, and this is it seems obvious. It's good that it's written, but it seems obvious. Surely, any exam, whether it be a BEd or whether it be a postgraduate certificate, must be able to measure whether a teacher has subject knowledge, whether a teacher can impart knowledge. I do not understand how we can have qualifications. I'm told it was mentioned that most of the evidence is anecdotal at this stage. Glad there is an investigation. I think it's far too late. I was told by a principal of a really well-renowned high school that the BEd has less academic rigor than any diploma of the past ever had. It has no academic rigor whatsoever. That the only teachers that she employs are teachers who have done a degree, an undergrad degree, and then the postgraduate certificate education. But BEd she will not go near. Now, I mean, BEd are not producing what is put in your policy. Surely you know that. Surely the exams must show that. So I'd appreciate if you could just expand on that. And then, Chair, I'd like some expansion on the diagnostic. That's number 3. Chair. Number 1 was recruitment. Number 2 was... Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, other chairperson, for intervening on my behalf. My third question, chairperson, is on the diagnostic assessment. I'm very interested to hear that. I wish you luck. I don't think you've got a chance of getting this through, but I hope you do. That you do diagnostic assessments on teachers. You're going to pilot those this year. I think it came from Mr. Mohammed. Pilot those this year and introduce them next year. You're very optimistic. I hope your optimism is well placed. This is going to be mandatory for all teachers to undergo diagnostic assessments. In other words, to test, what is it to test? Is it to test their subject knowledge? You're going to start with pilot this year, but all teachers next year. Is it testing subject knowledge in what? Is it testing also the ability to impart subject knowledge? I'm very concerned, just linked with that, that even the quality management system, the IQMS certainly does, but the new one that's on the table at the moment in the ELRC, has no mandatory training attached to it. So if a teacher is found to be lacking, if a teacher is found to lack subject knowledge, if a teacher is found to lack ability to impart subject knowledge, they cannot be made to go for training to do that. What they can do, the discipline, go through the disciplinary process, but they cannot be mandated to go through training, which is really concerning. But can we get more detail on the diagnostic assessments, please, and exactly how you plan to roll that out and in what areas? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Admiral. And I just think onto the knowledge, just add on something that I read yesterday in the papers, where they say that, you know, the lack of knowledge. And because I just read that they say that the students that go through a bachelor's degree is far better than someone that did the diploma at university. Just because it was in the papers yesterday. They spoke about the bachelor and they spoke about the diploma. And they said that those students had a big write up as far better. And to me, diploma and bachelor is the same process you go through. Thank you. In the New Age, or I read it was New Age. New Age, yeah. Thank you. Honourable Gina.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm very sure that on slide 13, there is a research there from Nidu, looking at the substantial changes within the teaching sector. And listing all those things, subject knowledge, practical knowledge, and ability to work with higher order cognitive processes. But then it said, the statement is not about new teachers. It reflects teachers in the system in general. Of which I think the thing that it's widely talked about. But what I'm interested in now is to say, when they did this research, did they compare then a new teacher coming into the system with an old teacher that has already been there in the system as to say, are we seeing any difference with new teachers that are getting into the system? Are we no more experiencing this shortage of knowledge, what is the comparison there? Because I think that will help even in shaping the programs. In the institution that you are talking about, shaping the program is to say, how are the new teachers going to be trained? I'm very interested in that comparison, Chairperson. Chairperson, again, there is this understanding as to say, when we look at the school, the performance of the school, most of the time the management, the head of the school, is the driver of most of the things that happen. Even we're talking of CTP and all the likes, the teacher development within the school itself. But for me, if ever even the leadership of the school is not up to scratch, we're not going anywhere. That is why we have programs like ACE programs where leadership is being trained. What is the take from both departments on such programs? Are we seeing any difference? Are we seeing the change? If not, are there any plans that specifically have to deal with the leadership of the school so that we see great change as to how our schools are being led? The last one, Chairperson, I know we could come up with more, but you have said we must come up with three. It's a question that has been widely asked. Taking from what we have said, Chairperson, is to say a person coming with diploma is better than the one with degree or the other way around. When we're still training as teachers, those who went to the colleges of education were regarded as the best because there was more practical than theory, of which those coming from the universities with the degree, it was more of theory than practical. My worry is, Jay, in whatever program that is there, how are we balancing the two? Because I don't see any way, if we can't balance the two, really when we talk of teaching, we must see the teacher in front of the class impacting knowledge, that's the practical part of it. But at the same time, the issue of knowledge gap, what is it that is, he's impacting to those learners? As to say, the programs that are there, how are we working
towards balancing the two. It has been an outcry and all the forth, specifically looking at the issues in inclusive education, Chairperson, is a disaster as a country we know. Are there any problems specifically for teachers for inclusive education, teachers for the blind, or we cannot always keep our equipment shying away from that angle? We've got quite a tough community that needs such an education. So what programs are there where we see from the initial stage that these teachers are being trained specifically for that area in our education system? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot. The ongoing could be any model later.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, money is under teacher supply and demand gap. I'm surprised that there are no graduates at all from Mpumalanga and Northern Cape for 2011. Why is that so? Because when we had a presentation last week, I think if my memory serves me well, there were teachers that were ready to be absorbed for 2011. If they were never absorbed, that means maybe there was no budget for them to be absorbed. Then what can the initial department do to ensure that provinces budget for these teachers? Unless there's another reason, maybe it can be explained to us. Because we know that they are in the program of Funza Lushaka. There's no way there can be no intake for a particular year. If maybe we can get an explanation. My second question is about the future of former colleges, particularly in Mpumalanga. I'm from Mpumalanga, and there are four colleges. Three of them are white elephants. Since the College of Education is now used as temporal university, because I know that thereafter we'll have four white elephants, because I know that there is a land earmark for the new university. It's not going to be A the way of the four colleges. What will be happening? I'm really worried as supporting the statement by all members, that if these colleges will be reopened, teachers trained in these colleges, I think it's something that would be welcome. But you know, I just want to know the future of these colleges. Thank you. And the third one is on qualifications. You have indicated that according to the research by Nindu, there's a challenge when it comes to teachers' knowledge. And I didn't hear, I heard about some of the interventions that you've put in place, but I didn't hear anything about upgrading of teachers. Because there was a time when teachers who were underqualified and those who had PTD, STDs, were made to upgrade through CESA, it's College of Education of South Africa, to do a HDE or a, it's HED, so that they can be at IQ level 7. I didn't hear anything concerning that. Is there still such a thing for teachers so that they can be able to upgrade? And
Honorable Mani.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether I should be asking questions or say whatever I want to say and then allow you to translate what I have said into questions.
We are not allowed that one. We want no speeches, only questions. No one made speeches here today.
Yeah, okay, Chair. Maybe I'll be having one question.
Very good.
It looks like we're seeing the quality of the teacher and the numbers of teachers as a financial to our education problems. I'm thinking of a situation where a properly qualified teacher, an intelligent teacher, is sitting somewhere trying to teach a few words other than roaming the streets. And then I would imagine that even if a teacher is intelligent and properly qualified, if there are no kids in the classroom, the results will not be as good as we would expect. What I'm trying to indicate is that what is it that we're going to do somewhere in the future with regard to the child? We're doing everything that we can do with the teacher, particularly the quality and quality. What are we going to do about the child somewhere along the line? That's my question.
Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson,
I would like to start my question just to support what my colleague has said with regard to the recruitment of teachers. I think the department should deliberately say recruitment and selection of aspirant teachers. Because, and my colleague next to me has indicated to some extent to that, it's not about only looking at the aspirant teacher as one that passed matric and have the academic sort of requirements, but it's also about looking at values, attitude, and behavior of such a student. Because I know some of my matriculants that were with me, we were at the same college of education. They were good in the academic, but values, attitude, and behavior made them some to drop out, some being expelled from teaching, and that was the problem. So we need to be having a strict selection process when it comes to teaching, including, may I add, including a health certificate. Health. Maybe you can also load it by saying mental health, because if you see what some teachers do, you might sometimes, do these people have something? Do they understand what they should be doing? Yes. So, thank you. I also would like to thank the department, both departments, on a very good presentation, really. I enjoyed it. And but there was also a very frank admission to say it's still the quality of the teachers that is a problem. So may I remind this honorable meeting that in my maiden speech, Chairperson, I said to the minister when we welcomed the split of the two departments, or DOE into DBE and the higher education, I said to Minister Mochera, Minister, will you please make sure that Minister Great Nzimande gets quality learners into his institutions? And I then requested the Minister of Higher Education, Minister, will you then on your side make sure that you send back to schools teachers of quality? So it is on record. Have we achieved it on both sides in basic education? No. So we need all of us, as a matter of public importance, look at the NIDI report and the accepted report that you are saying you are currently working on is needed as a matter of public importance. Chairperson, now let me then say, Honorable Gina has started this one, and I want to expand on that one. I'm going to be frank. I'm going to say that your type of teachers that you will be then, you cannot go without special education teachers. They must be part of the type of teacher that you train. Why I'm saying that? Look, there is currently there is a need for therapists in districts, let alone in schools. But if you have a specialist, a special education teacher, at least in a school, then you take care of that gap or that shortage at least. So, yeah. And then the last one is...
It's already three.
Chairperson?
It's already three.
No, Chair.
It's already three. On what the call?
Chairperson, can I just explain why I say it's two? The one was with the quality, the other one was with the specialist, and then the next one, in-service. In service training for teachers. With regard to the provincial development, education development institutions, can I just get an idea what are they doing about in-service training? I know my understanding is that people are invited to these institutions, but there is not, how can I say it, in-school training taking place. That part is still lacking. So especially with regard to mathematics teachers, as now, as we speak, we need in-service training at schools with regard to mathematics training teachers. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Koko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, my thanks for the presentation. Chairperson, the history of our country is and we talk about legacy and all those things. And I guess we understand why the majority of our teachers would need retraining after the gaps that have been identified. But the question that the department should answer really, maybe all of us should answer, why is it that even teachers that we are producing now have a problem? Why? When are we going to break the cycle? Why do we have a research telling us a new teacher cannot do the work? What is wrong with our system? I guess it touches on what I'm looking in our feet. And when are we breaking the cycle? In short, teachers that we produce now must be competent. We don't have those issues of heat and all those things as we speak now. There might be a little bit of that in terms of figures. But the system now cannot produce a teacher on arrival at school. The teacher needs reorientation. Like an old teacher trained 20 years ago who needs to be reorientated on caps and all those things. What is wrong with our system? I think we'll have to deal with that. The department must assist us answer that question. The second one, Chairperson, the establishment of professional teaching schools. And I want to touch, Chairperson, on what both you and Honorable Dean have already said about college versus university. And I know that the message is anecdotal, but some of it is based on personal experience. A teacher who did a three-year course at a college of education in the past, whether PTD or STD. This teacher started with practical teaching in year one. So by year three, they were reasonably more competent than a teacher who went to university for 4 years. Because this teacher would only start with practical professional in the fourth year. So we have that kind of problem. And if we accept that indeed is a problem, we should ask ourselves whether we should not reverse the process that we did, removing colleges of education and taking teachers to universities. The very universities that we commit were not doing a wonderful job. And I'll use the example of a college that was opened post 94 and for unknown reason closed. It's called Mastec in what used to be Guanambloro College of Education. That college, for the short period that it existed, Chairperson, produced some of the best teachers in the country. And the department can go and make a follow-up. Go and follow those teachers and see what they are doing. But if the college was closed and the students were sent to my alma mater, University of the North, now University of Limpopo, and we've been complaining about the quality of teachers, what are we doing? Now, as we establish, whether it is Kukuni or whether it is Giani or Mzikul anywhere, then whether the department should really not consider, even if these colleges are under the academic tutelage of universities, those students must stay there and be taught there and not be sent to universities, because we know the impact that happens there. For many universities, teaching education is not their priority. They have other priorities, and teaching is at the bottom rank of their priority list. I know it's touching on points, but it's something that departments should really consider. Teacher colleges were doing a wonderful job. Better than universities, I think. They can go and research that and see if our assertions are based on fact or sentiment. The third question, Chairperson, touches on the African language teachers and the foundation phase teachers, the shortage of those people. And I want to link this question to the problem of excess educators and educators who are held additional to the establishments in schools. I could even use Eastern Cape as an example. We hear that you have teachers that one have a shortage, you have an oversupply in others. Whether because these people are being paid, by the way, at any rate, and they are continuing to be paid. Whether the department does not want to take these teachers, whether it is for a year or whatever duration, to go and retrain them. We need African language teachers, many of them are not. Produce African language teachers in those educators. Produce foundation teachers in those educators. Because as we say now, you have double parking and shortage somewhere. whether the department does not want to do that. Thank you for now, Chairperson.
Honourable Mandisha.
Chair, colleagues, thank you very much. I'll be quite short. My question is, introduction of teachers or the teacher training being done by you having assessed the teacher-pupil ratios. I heard what you said, really. I'm saying the teacher-pupil ratios vis-a-vis the age of the existing teachers. I think that is quite important because you have raised this point and have said that I think about the 5 provinces, you have fewer teachers compared to the other 4 provinces. Now, my question is, if, of course, and that is the reality, you have teachers in those particular provinces where you say there are enough, and those teachers are 55 to 60, etc., they will be gone in a few, a few years. And albeit you say the teachers that we have at the moment in those provinces that you have cited are enough, that will never be the case. Because, yes, there are enough in those particular provinces, but then in a few years' time, the number shall have gone down. I just want to check that and to further say, what is your scientific analysis, or do you just take people for training? I say that I want to be a teacher. I go and register at a particular school, and you say, Mr. X, you are not allowed for training. What do you do? Have you, or are you able to assess, are you able to say, this year we want a teacher, for example, that we are going to train, that will be able to look within this kind of realm of education? Are you then able to work to, rather with the Department of Basic Education to assess that particular area? Are you able to work with the universities and the economy as a whole, so that you know exactly the kind of people that you want in the country? Or we just say, let's arise and say, we have done something, and you relate. Of course we shall relate. That's the point. Having spoken about the teacher-pupil ratio, I went to Limpopo a few weeks ago, and I went to one area called Sheo, where, again, albeit one will not go into very many things, I found there, and I think there you can as well, we'll give you the name of the school and the area, more than 600 pupils, but then only 3 teachers there.
Round up on the magician.
Yeah. Sorry?
I
oh, okay. Three to 600. Your assessment, how are you able to endorse that at the moment? You are saying we have these teachers, therefore we are enough. Okay? But then how are you able to assess insofar as that kind of MEV is concerned?
Thank you. What would like you to add on when it comes to supply and demand? What was worries me where the Punzul Sark on the other side? The Honourable Dekoba spoke to excess teachers. Because I'm always afraid that the temporary teachers, you know, you'll be caught up with that. And all of the temporary teachers on the one side. Because the Punzul Sark gets first priority into schools. I'm worried about the supply and demand when it comes to that. And then when it comes to this teaching school that you like to have, like with the universities. From my experience, you have to look at all sides. We used to get teachers coming into college, I mean, learners coming to college from a school within the vicinity. And then we taught them. Or we will go out for 2 or 3 weeks to a school to teach there. And to me, if
such a professional school, won't it become something like elitist? Because that school is going to have everything. And that is worrying me. So I have to think very carefully, because the children will perhaps have another attitude that used to be a, that went, you know, go to those, such a school. Sorry. You have answer? We can start with the, who did honorable? We can start with the DG. Thank you. And all questions, as you see, interlinked. They are interlinked. Thank you.
So, thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, I think, Chair, you are spot on, because the questions are actually interlinked.
Yeah.
And in the main, they are putting to us as to what would be the effective and the comprehensive full cycle of training and developing a teacher. And these are pertinent questions that are actually important for us to look at. My colleagues will come in. The development and training of a teacher, we view this in the department as one of the critical areas that we actually need to crack and succeed in doing. And we are investing a lot of resources in it. There are quite a number of anecdotal evidence that are brought before us. But I think on the blind spot, you develop a teacher in the system, and the teacher ends up in a school. Now, what happens when a teacher arrives at a school? You develop a lesson, you present a lesson, to assess and do remedial work. Now, what becomes important, at what stage or after how many number of lessons that a teacher has presented in a class, do you pick up that, no, the teacher is not doing what he's supposed to be doing? I think in the broad scheme of things, that is quite very much important. I'm raising this using myself as an example. When I came out of the training process, getting into a classroom, the assessment that was made was that, no, the manner in which you are presenting this lesson is above the level of the understanding of the children. You need to adjust downward. And that continuous support at the school level made many of us better teachers. So on the blind spot, I think it's something that we need to pay attention to as well. My colleague is going to take up some of the questions on the professional development of FET college lecturers. There are a lot of programs that we are working on this, because what we found was that about 57% of FET college lecturers do not have pedagogy. And since we had to develop programs to assist them so that they acquire this training. And further on, we have developed through collaboration with universities, employers, and other stakeholders, a policy framework for the training and development of FET college lecturers to address this particular question and anomaly. And further on, we are also working with our universities in exploring whether, in the first instance, to become a lecturer, you don't have to have a pedagogy. You train, master's, you enroll, you're a junior lecturer, you get PhD, you lecture. Now, one of the challenges is as to whether we shouldn't be looking at a standardized approach that would ensure that every lecturer at whatever level in the system would have that exposure of training for pedagogy in the first instance, and so that we are able to maximize the impact and the quality of imparting knowledge to students or to learners in the system on an ongoing basis. Some of the pertinent questions, Dr. Green will come in, as well as Mr. Mohammed.
Dr. Green and then Mr. Mohammed, thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. There were a lot of questions. I'm going to try and pull out the main themes rather than trying to just each one specifically. But thank you really for frank questions and engagement. I think for us this is meant to be a learning exercise, and we need to take what's coming out of this committee back to inform the work. The issue around the teacher quality, I think let's just deal with this one as kind of big theme that's coming out. And the anecdotal evidence that points to problems with teacher quality introduces new teachers entering the system. Reports like the NEDU report and other research reports. And I want to emphasize that, that while I highlighted the example of the NEDU research as an example, it's not the only research that points to the issue. The themes that I pulled out under that reference to the NEDU research are more general themes that come out of the literature and out of what people say anecdotally. The reference to the issue around this applies to teachers in basic education generally is in reference to research in general that is exploring teacher competence. Research hasn't made a distinction between this is a new teacher versus this is an old existing practicing teacher. It's really showing where those gaps exist. So that reference in the slide was really intended not to make a distinction between new teachers and existing teachers, but just to say this is a general issue relating to teachers, whether they are teachers in the system or whether they are new teachers coming out of the system, out of the universities. And there's a number of reasons for this. I don't think we can throw history away. I think it still is with us and manifests itself to a large extent. And if you do the maths, we have 400,000-odd teachers in the system. Universities have been producing teachers for the last 5 or 6 years and producing low numbers. So let's say 5 times 10,000 would be 50,000 new teachers, and that's gross exaggeration. There are 370-odd other teachers in the system. So I think we can't point fingers only to the new teachers coming out of the system. The weight is the weight of numbers. And so we can't say colleges are better than universities or vice versa. I think we have to just say we have a problem with issues of teacher quality in the system, and let's work to address those in different kinds of ways. In the university teacher education system, I have indicated that there is a strategy in place. And another member did point to the new teacher education qualifications policy. That policy is a very new policy. It was only created in 2011. Universities are recurriculating and redeveloping their programs as we speak to begin offering them. None of the new qualifications are being offered as yet. These will be offered as these new qualifications become accredited and come on. So what we have in the system is still the old policy guiding existing programs. We are really hoping through our evaluation process that we ensure that we get quality systems in place. And through the stronger monitoring processes that we put in place, that we ensure that universities do start dealing with the issues that have been highlighted through the research. The issue of knowledge and practice and the balance with regard to those in teacher education is dealt with specifically in the policy. The policy uses a concept known as knowledge mix, and it talks about the ratios of different kinds of knowledge that have to be in place in order to make a qualification program purposeful. So for an initial teacher education program, you will see that there's a heavy emphasis on a knowledge mix that focuses on disciplinary knowledge and practical knowledge to make an effective beginning teacher. The issue of time spent in schools is key, is critical. I do take the criticism that's been made of some higher education institutions, where practice was, let's do the theory first and get them to go into schools in the last, a kind of 3+1 model. Some institutions have applied it. That has been tightened up drastically. And if you look at the new policy, you will see there's a stipulation there that teaching practice must be spread across the program from first year to fourth year, and it must be integrated into the context of the program. So it can't be practiced in isolation to theory. What's learned theoretically must be applied in practice, is a stipulation in the policy. So these issues are being picked up in the policy, and it's going to be the main vehicle through which we drive the issue of teacher quality. Let's pick up the issue of the teacher education campuses. So the approach at present is to develop new campuses for teacher education that are linked to universities, but the teaching happens on those campuses. Right? So, for example, at the Bowman Valley College of Education, it is a campus of the new university, but it will be a campus in its own right that offers its programs on that campus, with teachers on that campus, not teachers transferring between two campuses. The teachers on that campus, the students will be on the campus in terms of staying in residence. And it's not a temporary campus that will close when the new university opens. It's a permanent fixture of the system as we go forward. The issue of training of the teacher educators is an important aspect, I think, as well. I think in higher education there's this trajectory that happens that you do well in your undergraduate degree, you do well in your postgraduate degree, you become a lecturer. Teacher education, it is quite different though. Most of the teacher educators are people that do the VAs or PGCEs, go out into schooling, continue with their studying, and then come back into teacher education. So most of our teacher educators actually have some bedding in the schooling system. Very few of them go the direct route, the direct academic route. Having said that, however, we have to create a better understanding of the teaching context for teacher educators. And this teaching school and professional practice school is the issue that we're utilizing to drive that. So if you have teaching schools and a network of professional practice schools across the country, the understanding is that universities will have strong relationships with those schools, that you'll have even a staff sharing between those schools, so that the lecturers can visit the school and be part of the teaching in schools, and the teacher at those schools can be part of the teaching in the universities. For example, during the method courses, as we call them. And the idea of these schools being elitist, I think, is something we have to take very seriously. What we are not saying is we want highly resourced, wealthy schools. We want just normal schools that are functional. That's the kind of key criteria. So it's functional schools in the system that can support teacher education. Not change in any way so that they become idealistic, but retain their nature so that teacher education students can derive the best benefits that can from them in relation to the real context of teaching and learning. The issue of recruitment, I think, is an important one. We haven't had the luxury in the recent past of being selective because we've had this big disjuncture between teacher supply and demand. And the fact that teaching was deemed to be of such a low status that we're struggling to attract the numbers that we need. However, I think as we go forward, we have to pick this up in much, much more stronger, in much, much more stronger ways. We have to be focusing not just on the best achieving school leaders because they've done well academically, but we have to also be focusing on the soft issues, like attitude, like values, like my empathy for kids and my willingness to work with learners is something that has to be very important. And I think we are entering that position where we can do this now, because we are having many more applicants for teacher education than we can actually absorb in the system. Many of the universities are now starting to say no space. And we're now needing to be thinking of, and I'm saying it's not in place at present, and this is a flaw, we're needing to be thinking of putting in place a system to make sure that we select teachers in much more appropriate ways.
We always used to say that when it comes to teaching, it is a calling or a vocation, and I think it might fall back to that.
Yep. So same ways of assessing applicants to determine the attitude and their perception and their understanding and their motivation is what's needed. And the old system of principals interviewing, etc., might be... I remember when I became a teacher, my principal actually interviewed me as well. So I think we need to revisit that and to put in place practical ways of dealing with better selection of students into teaching. The issue of the dropout rate, I think I must point out that slide doesn't show dropout rates. All that slide shows is the number of headcount enrollments in the system in a particular year and the number of graduates in a particular year. If we had to find dropout rates, we had to do a cohort study. And we have to do a cohort study over a number of years. So to determine dropout rates, what you need to do is to, for example, look at the intake in 2005 across the country in the Battle of Education program and track each of those students, 2006, 2007, 2008, to see what happened to each of those. Now, we have done that for the Bachelor of Education degree. And that we did it on a 2005 cohort study. That cohort study does show that at least 30% of the students that we took in 2005 didn't make it completely through the system. So, yes, the dropout rate is of concern. But that slide doesn't show dropout rates. And those figures don't translate into dropout. But it is an issue that we have to address. And I've indicated the strategy. So, and some of the members have indicated a lack of strategy. I think there is a clear strategy, and we have been trying to communicate it, but that's not too successfully, given the nature of this presentation. I mean, our overarching strategy is the integrated strategic planning framework. And then underpinning that strategy, we have activity plans for each of the activities within that provide us the pathway to rolling out of those activities. So we are informed and directed by an overarching strategy, including the reestablishment of some of the former sites of teacher colleges as new teacher education institutions. There was a question around what's the future of these. The Ngong conference last year asked for an audit to be undertaken of all the teacher education colleges that existed in the country. And that audit is currently being done now. It will give us a sense of which of those campuses are white elephants or not being utilized for education purposes, which could possibly be utilized, either as teacher education campuses or as other educational institutions within the post-schooling context. For example, FET college campuses, or for example, the emerging idea around continuing education and training colleges. So there is idea that we need to identify all of these white elephants that might be out there and draw them into the post-school system. I must say, however, that we have done this exercise in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal. In KwaZulu-Natal, the only site that's not being utilized at present is the Amzumkulu College of Education site. Hence our trying to obtain that one as a teacher education campus. Every other former college site in KwaZulu-Natal is being utilized mostly for education purposes, either as FET colleges or as high schools, some of the smaller ones became high schools, or as departmental training facilities. The same situation exists in the Eastern Cape. So there's not many of these that exist out there, but we will be moving to identify which ones can be utilized. Regarding the issue of FET, when I introduced our work, I did say I'm the chief director of all teaching and learning development, specifically because its main function is to strengthen teaching across the system. So we're looking at teaching in preschooling, teaching in schooling, teaching in post-schooling, including universities. This presentation has been biased towards this audience, but focused on basic education and teachers for basic education. But certainly there are strong moves being made to develop teachers for the FET colleges. The Honourable Member will be pleased to hear that today, in fact, quite a coincidence, a new policy has been gazetted. You should see it in today's Gazette. A policy of professional qualifications for technical and vocational education and training lecturers. So in a similar vein, we have the school teacher qualifications policy. We now have a policy for FET college lecturers. And we will now work with a system to provide those qualifications for FET lecturers. The problem was we haven't had such a thing in the system. If you wanted to be an FET college lecturer, one of the routes was you came straight out of the workplace and you became a practical lecturer in the college, teaching artisans. Or you did a teacher education qualification and you transition into a FET college lecturer. For the first time, we now have a policy that describes a whole set of qualifications specifically for technical and vocational education and training lecturers. And the policy accommodates the needs of those people who have an artisan background and need to teach the more technical subjects versus those teachers who need to teach the more general kinds of subjects like the languages and the mathematics and the physical sciences in FET colleges. And we'll work with the university system to get those programs being offered. the issue of inclusive education generally taken up in a new policy. So the expectation is that all teachers should be orientated towards an inclusive approach in their teaching. Right? So inclusive classrooms. The issue of special needs education, however, is an area that we have to work hard at. Mr. Mohammed has indicated that we haven't been producing teachers for the blind, teachers for the deaf, teachers for the autistic. In through formal programs, I think since the advent of democracy, that kind of focus has died. And many institutions have actually lost expertise. We have some institutions in the country that were able to do that, but the expertise has been lost. So the approach now is to develop centers of excellence. We want to identify a few universities across the country where we'll have a center of excellence for deaf education, center of excellence for education of the visually impaired. And we have already started to identify those universities. For example, the University of Johannesburg has indicated that we could work with them to develop a center of excellence for the education of the autistic. And Fitz University has already got a small center for deaf education, which we will strengthen. And the idea is because there are small numbers of these teachers across the country, that we have strong centers that we can bring these teachers to so that they can get really good development at these centers. I think I've covered some of the main points around the issue of quality and quantity and perhaps more nuance.
Can you start rounding up,
please? Sure. Thanks very much. I'll cover the issues that are mainly directed to the DDE part of the presentation. There's a question around the number of teachers in the system and the provincial breakdown. I wasn't quick enough to draw it up from my ICT equipment, but we can easily make that available. And it's not 270,000, it's 380,000 teachers. We can give a province-by-province breakdown. But in the presentation, I indicated that in the last 2 years, we covered 270,000 teachers for CAPS orientation. And that information on province-by-province, we can also supply. There were a number of issues around inclusive education, and there was a question around what are we expecting to achieve with a targeted one teacher per school. The aim of that project is to ensure that at least one teacher, and you know, I'm taking the point about the ambitiousness of the particular program, but what we would expect the teachers to have is the ability to screen, identify, and assess learners with different learning needs. And then also to be able to ensure that in the school there is a program, a system by which learners with the different levels of need are addressed. So for example, through the district office, there's a program for equipping district offices to be able to support schools where schools don't have the wherewithal to meet the needs of the learners. And also referrals, particular agencies where schools don't have the ability to deal with the nature of the need. Then there was a question around what's being done for teachers for blind currently. I did indicate in the presentation that it's taken us a long time, but we've now formed a relationship with the South African Braille Authority and other organizations that have been doing work. And as I indicated, there are two programs that we presented to the schools of the blind last year, and it's two succeeding programs, and again, we can make that information and those programs available if needed. Similarly, with the schools of the deaf, there's a program underway to get the organizations that work in that particular area. And we're acknowledging that the level of specific competence in especially the areas of the blind and the deaf is weak in the system at the moment. I mean, a large majority of our teachers in schools of the blind don't have Braille capacity, for example. So we're acknowledging that. And there was a question around the diagnostic assessment. And just to indicate that in a teacher development framework, it was agreed by all the parties that our current system needs to be strengthened. And just to share again with honorable members that even internationally, this is a recent phenomenon, the practice of assessing teachers for competence in ongoing practice. So it's an evolving field even outside of our country. But what we've done is the people that we've got working on this area have looked at the ANA and NSC documentation and looked at the areas where it appears teachers are having difficulty in teaching particular areas. And we've also then asked them to look at pedagogical content knowledge. One of the challenging areas in this work is how do you assess a teacher's teaching skill on paper?
And it's a challenge that I think collectively we're going to have to be able to address. Our thinking was that we would do the pilot, and you know, we're acknowledging that given the climate that we have in the country, that there might be challenges, there will be challenges in the acceptance of the system. But if you look at the teacher development framework, what it says is that we want to encourage teachers to voluntarily participate in this process. It's not going to be easy. Our sense is that if we're going to be making it mandatory without negotiating with our social partners around implementation of this, there might be initial resistance. But at the 2009 summit, it was agreed that the system needs a program of assisting teachers in a non-threatening way. So I'm acknowledging that it's not going to be easy, but we will take it through the, all the processes that need to be gone through for us to be able to work that through. Nearly ending, addressing all the matters, if I can just pick up on a few of the others. There's a question around the upgrading of teachers. We're at the moment seeing through the National Professional Diploma for Educators. There's a time frame that was agreed for fading that out. And in the policy framework, what we've indicated is that some teachers, so for example, we have professional we have the first degree but without the professional qualification, and we've identified the number of them, should complete the BGCE, and the other teachers should then participate in the BEd. In other words, through an RPL process, complete whatever is required for them to be completing. So there is an upgrading process underway. Lastly, if I could just touch on the question that I think this Honourable Member Smiles was asking the question, what are the incentives doing in the country at the moment? And I mentioned the five, just very quickly. Western Cape has got CTLI, it's a centralized system. From all accounts, it's quite a successful system, but we've engaged them with the fact that the practical component is not strong enough. So what they're doing is they're bringing teachers from all the different parts of the province to a central space. They run quite, as I said, from the information effective programs, and the results in West Cape seem to indicate that the process is working. But we're not happy with practical performance. Similarly, Gauteng has got the Matthew Greenway School for Leadership and the Cy Bono Centers. Mpopo has got MathTech. They're doing very well on the maths and science part of it. But our observation is that the outreach of MathTech is not deep enough. It's very good in the urban areas of Limpopo and in the town centers, but not sufficiently supportive of the rural ones. Eastern Cape, the running of that institute is a bit variable, so there's a good couple of challenges in that one. And KZN is in the process of restructuring the Provincial Teacher Development Institute. But we're accepting the point that the practical component of what the current work needs much more attention, and we're hoping that the professional practice schools will address that in the long run. There was a question of school leadership, school managers and leadership. In addition to the programs that the department is running, there's a very strong emphasis led by the minister herself to tighten accountability of principals. So, for example, the minister meets with the district director on a quarterly basis with a sense of giving direct feedback and direct direction to each of the district directors around the improvement of schools in their particular districts. And then I think the president himself initiated a program of direct contact with the principal. So in addition to the academic and other support programs, there's been a very strong drive from the department side on the accountability. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll ask DG Tanda.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. There are questions related to HR matters in terms of planning. But briefly, that is around the incentives for the retention of teachers that was raised, and that there is a policy in that regard that different provinces use differently. Like, for example, we've got the rural allowance, which really is assisting provinces, you know, to retain teachers to go to those rural areas. So there is a policy that speaks to the matter. But secondly, it's much more about the issues of excess teachers that was raised. How best we to utilize those excess educators through maybe initiatives such as teacher development. But I think it is important to say that problem is not about that aspect initially. It's about the movement of those cells from the areas of need from the area where they are double packed to the areas of need, which we dealt with it extensively in the previous presentation to say that we have developed strategies around that matter. That is why in the Eastern Cape you see movement. That is why in Limpopo in particular there is some considerable gains, because in Limpopo we had more than 2,000 educators who were double packed, were seen to be access to the system. But today we've got less than 500 of those type of access educators, which allows the system to really attract more educators into the system. I think also lastly is about the emphasis on enhancing teacher support at a local health level. That is why we are heightening programs that teacher centers need to provide to teachers, so that we deal with this aspect that was raised about the retraining of the teachers in terms of orientation, so that we move from the issue of maybe 2 days workshop towards a structured continuous support for teachers within the approximate. As we talk about the roles of the teacher centers. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. DG, would you like to say anything? Alright. Like I promised to people, just write down and give it straight away to the department before they leave, because we won't be seeing higher education again. I think when it comes to the question, it was just to enhance what you are doing, and I think you took note of it. But the enhancement was in what is good, was in this new dispensation that we are in. And then we have to thank the Minister for making this year, 2013, the year for inclusive education. But I think that is something important that we have to speak to, because we saw the problem with poverty. That is why they need to do something. I would like to just give the report on African Lambda. We hand over to Mr. Mawele, and you are going to give us the report. Then what we will do, the questions we'll ask. Fine, you may leave. The questions we'll ask, and then we want the responses from the department in writing. Because we'd like to complete at 1 o'clock. And I hate this when people leave, they make noise. Honourable members, we are now ready. We are ready. Well, so it's very irritating when I hear too much talking.
And we have to respect the people that speak, because they respected you when you asked your question. You may start, Ms. Moeri. And just tell us which is about this presentation. I'm giving you a half an hour. And then until the members ask questions, start 25 to 1. And then the members are going to ask questions, and you're going to take it with you. And by Thursday, you want our answers. May I start? Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee and the Honorable Chairperson of the Higher Education and Training Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members. Chairperson, on a lighter note, I hope the fact that some members of the audience left after the last presentation is not a vote of no confidence in this very important and groundbreaking policy in the sector. I just thought that I must make that that comment on a lighter note. Chairperson,
don't worry, because I see higher education is the chief director here. So everyone is much more interested. And just people are debating this afternoon.
Okay.
So some have moved out. Thank you.
Let me also express our appreciation and indicate that we are humbled and inspired by the positive feedback that we have received from the general public of South Africa, from different formations ever since the minister announced the implementation of this policy in 2014. And I think that we have experienced a national great as ours. And we're quite excited as the sector to be at the center of this very important development. Chairperson, I'm just going to touch a few points in the main the presentation. It's really intended to say, what is this policy about? Where is this policy coming from? And how do we envisage the implementation of the policy? And lastly, what work has been done to prepare for the implementation of the policy, which I think it's a real a big issue for particularly these two committees, the level of the readiness of the sector to implement the policy. This is just the outline of the presentation. Of course, the purpose, which I've already indicated, will briefly outline where we're coming from. The legislative framework, talking to the lawmakers, I wouldn't like to spend much time talking about policy and, you know, the legislation where we're coming from. I assume that the audience is well-versed with those processes. The lesson learned, because there are trailblazers in this exercise, quite interesting for the audience. We're not doing this for the first time, which is a good thing. There are provinces that have traversed the road that we are going to start fully traveling from 2014. And of course, the educational rationale for implementing this policy. There could be aspects of why we implement this policy other than the educational rationale. But we depart from an educational rationale point of view. I will share briefly also some of not anecdotal evidence, empirical evidence, to suggest that there is a desperate need for this policy. In fact, all the role players that we have engaged with, all of them, including universities, and by the way, last week I shared a platform with Professor Graham Rock from the University of Johannesburg. All of them say, this is long overdue. Where have you been? This should have happened many years ago. But also I'll just indicate to you that this policy is not implemented in isolation. It comes from a language development framework. And I will articulate briefly the key element of the language development framework of the sector. And of course, as I indicated, I'll just touch a little bit on what the policy is about, the objectives of the policy, the language selection within the policy, the implications for the sector. Of course, the overall implications is that all schools will be expected to offer an African language either at home language level or at the first additional language level. That is the overall implication. But what are the specific implications to make the implementation
happen or successful. I'll also look at the issue of advocacy, because a policy of this nature needs a strong advocacy drive. The consultation process that we have started with and where we are with the consultation process, and then the implementation plan, then I'll conclude, Chairperson. Well, as I indicated, the purpose really is to apprise the joint committees of why the need for this policy and what we have done in terms of preparing for its implementation. As I indicated, really we depart from the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the country, and the sections are quite very specific and clear, including the National Education Policy Act, the South African Schools Act, which is a very important legislation regulating the organization and running of our schools, the norms and standards for language policy. You'll see, Chairperson, that given the fact that norms and standards were declared in 1996 and we're only implementing in 2014, it says that we've taken a considerable period to think about this policy and to conceptualize its implementation. Well, as we all know that the Constitution talks about 11 languages and all of them are there, and that indigenous languages must be promoted and protected as well, and that measures must be taken to give practical effect to that. The issue of the Bill of Rights, I've learned from the Human Rights Commission working with that important statutory body of the country, that the Bill of Rights are not subject to progressive realization. A Bill of Rights must be given effect to as a matter of agency. If you have not given expression to the implementation of the Bill of Rights, you must give a credible plan to show that you are on the route to implement or to respond to imperatives of the Bill of Rights. And this policy, of course, gives us that opportunity to give effect to some of the aspects of Section 29 of the Constitution. Well, as I indicated, the national policy is about the advancement, the protection of the rights of course, of every learner in the system, but much more important in making sure that the learner learns in the language that is preferred. I will leave these other areas, Chairperson, and just indicate that in terms of the language policy, these are some of course, the what is contained in terms of the aims of the language in education policy, and I'll leave it to the audience also to go through that in their own time, because you've got about three slides that cover that. Let me spend some time on this slide, which is about lessons learned. As I indicated that some work has happened in this area, you can see that in terms of promoting an indigenous language, Eastern Cape is one of those provinces that are doing quite well. Eastern Cape started a project of promoting the use of home language from grade R to grade 6. The policy allows for that. Generally in the system, 99% of schools use home language from grade R up to grade 3. And then you experience a transition from grade 4. Minister Motsoaledi, when he was the MED for Education 2005-2006, introduced this policy in Limpopo. The benefits that you are reaping in Limpopo are part of that effort at that time. And I can tell you that in provinces like Limpopo are some of the laboratory centers that we'll be using, and we started doing that, looking at how they prepared and started implementing this policy and so on. So Eastern Cape involves 74 schools as a pilot to implement, and this pilot is on this year. Very interesting experience from the Western Cape,
by the way, requested for the introduction of African languages. The unfortunate bit is that government never came to the party to support these initiatives. They were essentially left in the hands of school governing bodies. And not only in the Western Cape, in Mpumalanga as well, the same thing happened in Northwest. The same thing happened. And because of the struggle to sustain these initiatives in terms of challenges around resources and so on, in the Northwest, the project collapsed. But in the Western Cape, many of these schools are still running this project. And these African languages are offered at a second additional language in the main, and some at first additional language. And what is happening there, which is quite interesting, is that a group of schools have been working together to share the expenses around you know, paying salaries for teachers who are offering this language. I've spoken to Limpopo, you can see 2006, as I said, it started in 2005. I now understand why Honorable Khanyego is so proud about always mentioning that in terms of Limpopo. I also raised the issue about Mpumalanga, that in Mpumalanga, some schools have started with the implementation of this. So there are very good lessons coming out of this. And again, not anecdotal evidence, from ANA, the diagnostic reports, the analysis that experts are engaging with, have revealed that many of our learners who are rushed into using English as the language of teaching and learning lack the necessary language treasure to demonstrate language and skills that they have acquired. And therefore, as I said, there are many pedagogical reasons why this policy needs to be implemented. Well, the issue of the Constitution, I've touched. The issue of protecting our culture and heritage, I've also covered that. It is sufficiently covered. Now, honorable members, if I fail in anything, I want to make sure that I don't fail on this one. The reason why learning outcomes in the main in South Africa have been poor for many years is simply because our children have been battling with language proficiency. There's abundant body of research in that respect. And the recent international studies from PILS and TIMS, as well as SUPMED, I mean, it comes out quite clear, including ANA. You can see that these learners are battling with expressing themselves in terms of the knowledge and the skills acquired. Now, we did very little about that over years. This just continued and continued. That's what we are saying. It became a perennial problem, and I think the time has come. And we're not surprised that, in fact, everybody is saying it's long overdue. This should have been introduced a long time ago. As I said, we depart from the language development framework, which I will share with you. These are some of the examples drawn from the recent ANA, which was administered in 2012. You do have a copy of this presentation at your own leisure. You can go through these examples to see how our children are battling with demonstrating accumulated knowledge and skills, simply because they struggle with language proficiency. Now, you can see that, I mean, from the PILS, which was administered in 2006, Africans and English are slightly up. I mean, Africans is right on top there. English is right on top there. It's not accidental, nor coincidental. There is a reason behind that. I mean, even now, we still get a lot of investment in improving the proficiency of English. I mean, the basic education sector, we are supported by the British Council. We've been training our subject advisors, training our teachers to improve their proficiency and utility of English. Very little has been done to do the same in terms of the African languages. Now, this is the pre-PILS results of 2011. As you can see that Africans and English are right up there, And the rest of the African languages are, you know, you can say that they are battling to catch up with English. I must indicate that English and Afrikaans are better, but compared to, you know, other languages in internationally, they are also not at the level where they should be. Much can be done. Learners who are offering English and Afrikaans can do much better than what they have done. But what is important is that English and Afrikaans have gone beyond the international center point, and the international center point is 500. If you are 500 and above, you are deemed to have met the requirements in terms of the international center point. So I don't think that I need to emphasize this point any further. As I said, there's enough empirical evidence to suggest that we need to do something quite drastic to promote and to protect African languages. I must also indicate that this contributes immensely, because learners who are taking African languages, particularly in your foundation phase and so on, are in the majority. And it's for that reason that this country has been deemed to be underperforming compared to other countries in the world. I have learned in working with these things that improving quality is not an overnight job. It's like dealing with an octopus almost for a very long time. This is another example, second additional language, English. This is your first paper. You can see that overall learners have passed, but they don't come to the real expected level. As you can see, the percentages there indicating different categories of questions and so on. The second paper, the same, and then the third paper there, the same. This is very important because it's linked to the issue of promoting and protecting African languages. Very important. This is the language development framework that I referred to. We've started introducing English as first additional language in grade 1 in 2012, simply because of the empirical evidence coming from ANA, coming from the international studies, indicating that learners who move from home language of an African language into English in grade 4, they battle with the language treasure in grade 4. So we introduced that. It was well received in the system. The general public supported us. The media was quite great also in supporting us in introducing English as first additional language. And then the second one is the incremental introduction of African languages. We've started with preparations in this regard. Pilots are running in provinces, as I indicated. We're also making sure that primary learning and teaching support materials in place. There's a cogent plan to drive the implementation of this policy. The third important aspect is the development of the South African Sign Language as a subject from grade R to grade 12. The sector has completed the project. We are piloting this, the implementation of South African Sign Language in Gauteng and the Western Cape. We've identified schools that will be able, because of the facilities that are available, that can afford us that window of opportunity to pick up lessons in preparation for implementation in 2014. In other words, in 2014, we'll be implementing African languages as well as South African Sign Language. And also will be starting from grade R. What is also important is that in future we are going to introduce sign language in your ordinary public schools as part of strengthening social cohesion, so that future South Africans will also be able, it won't be compulsory, it will be optional, so that they are able to communicate with those South Africans that can only communicate with them through sign language. And then the last important one is what we call English across the curriculum. We are strengthening our efforts of introducing EFAL from grade 1 throughout, and then in the further education and training, in other words, from grade 10,
we are going to introduce from next year what we call English across the curriculum. What do we mean by that? We want to emphasize the point that every teacher who teaches in English as a language of teaching and learning is an English teacher. To assist in improving the proficiency of English as a language of teaching and learning. So that is where we're starting from. I'll also not waste time on this one in terms of what the policy is about. The objectives of the policy are really to improve proficiency and utility in previously marginalized African languages. We all know, I also don't want to get into that, our history is well known by the audience. To increase access to languages by all learners beyond just English and Afrikaans, and to promote social cohesion as well as preserving our heritage and culture. One academic said, when you are in China, you learn in Chinese. But that's not what we are asking for in South Africa. Learners will continue to learn as a medium of instruction. The South African schools act as according to the school governing body to determine that. But we are saying, in addition to that, learners who go out of the system must be proficient in at least one of the African languages going forward. And this is the language selection for first additional language, as you can see there. I also not spend much time on that. What are the specific implications of implementing this policy? Now, provinces such as the Western Cape, such as Limpopo, schools out of their own volition chose to increase time for teaching and learning because the current policy does not provide for that. Now, the implementation of this policy necessitates for a major policy shift in terms of time allocated for teaching and learning. What does it mean? It means we'll need more time, probably 1 or 2 45 minutes per day to accommodate the implementation of this policy. But as I want to emphasize, what has been happening historically in provinces that implemented even before, schools out of their own volition just decided to increase time allocated for teaching and learning. But we are going to make sure that it's infused in the policy. The second implication has to do with post-provisioning model. These implications have been identified with provinces, with school governing bodies. For instance, the Association of School Governing Bodies, such as FESTAS, they sit in our National Consultative Forum. These are some of the things that they identified. They said, for the successful implementation of the policy, these things must be addressed as a matter of extreme agency. And all governing bodies and provinces, all of them never raised the issue of the availability of teachers. I want to emphasize the point. The availability of teachers for now is not a problem. The problem is provision in terms of the teaching posts. Because these schools that have started implementing this policy said to us, we've got teachers that we are paying from the school governing body allocation, the norms and standards for school funding. So all that you need for you to pay for this post or to make this post available, the teachers are there. Provinces are saying, we've got teachers in addition. The majority of the teachers who are in addition happens to be teachers who are teaching languages, and the majority are African languages. And many of those are your foundation-based teachers, your intermediate-based teachers, and so on. The next issue then is about the orientation, because even though these teachers are suitably qualified, our view is that they need to be properly prepared so that we don't lend the implementation of this policy to any possibility of failure. They have to be properly socialized so that they know what is expected of them and how are they expected to implement the policy. The fourth one is around the primary learning and teaching support materials. Fortunately, we developed capacity in the sector to make workbooks available. We're going to use workbooks to drive the implementation of this. Workbooks are already available in first additional language in the majority of the African languages. And then we are also working with publishers who have indicated the willingness to support this project. We also have projects that we commissioned years ago, like Ituba project, putting experts together to develop primary learning materials in African languages. So that is the resource base that we are going to use to drive the implementation of this policy. The initial teacher training, the presentation that we had before this one, touched on making sure that we build capacity so that over the years, initially, we don't seem to have a problem with teachers, but as we upscale, we need to make sure that we've got enough teachers to take the implementation to grade 12. And basic education and DHET are working together on that one. And then financial implications, of course, like I said, one good project from the Western Cape is that a cluster of schools shared a teacher who was competent in teaching African languages, and then they paid for the expenses of this teacher in terms of moving from one school to the other, but also providing teaching in these schools. And saying that government will make these resources available, take over that burden from school government bodies so that it doesn't hamper the implementation of the policy. Furthermore, we have conducted an audit, honorable members. As you can see, provinces indicated their state of readiness, particularly around the demand, supply, and utilization of teachers. And as you would read from that column that shows progress, provinces indicated that indeed they are ready to implement this policy from a teacher supply point of view. And in fact, all provinces are upbeat, working feverishly around the clock to make sure that we finalize preparations, and before the end of the year we'll be reporting to see and to indicate our state of readiness. Well, the issue of the HEI guaranteeing the upscale of training of teachers so that we meet the expectations of the policy in upscaling it and charge that one. The issue of that has been caught by one teacher. We have advised provinces that in schools where teachers are not competent in teaching the African languages, it's obligatory that we make a teacher available. And DBE is working with provinces to make these posts available in instances where teachers will not be able to. And that is already known by provinces. Provinces know which school will require a teacher, which school has got a teacher already who can be given as an additional responsibility to take care of grade R and grade 1.
You have just given a copy to Lowell, because we don't have snow facts. You can continue. You may continue, don't worry.
I'm very sorry about that one. It's the only slide that is new that can face. And I'm sorry about that. And it was born from the fact that the Deputy Minister advised that it's important that we put it in, and it happened only last night. I need to profusely apologize for that. That information is available. There's no malice. In terms of advocacy, the Minister is leading the advocacy exercise as well as the MEDs. We have started engaging with formations representing parents and learners, and of course we'll continue to strengthen our advocacy programs as well as the utilization of workbooks. I'm not sure whether we shared with you, honorable members, that we subjected the quality and the utilization of our workbooks to an international research which was conducted by an Australian group. And the findings of that study are quite heartwarming. The utilization of workbooks is increasing in the system, and learners and parents are beginning to identify with these workbooks. In terms of consultation, ESCOM and CEM has dealt with this policy for the last 2 years. The National Consultative Forum, SAFA, we've made a presentation to them, and discussions are ongoing at that level. We will be putting this policy out for public comment. We're still finalizing
the internal processes for ESCOM and CEM to just give it the green light to go out for public comments. We've been involved in processes that is the ESCOM subcommittee to engage organized labor, and we've received positive feedback there. Organized labor is of the same view as this policy is long overdue, and today we're making this presentation to you. This is the plan. Next year is grade R and grade 1, and then it will be based in over these years at the end. And in conclusion, Chairperson, I think we have learned that if you talk to a man in a language he understands, that goes to his head. And if you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. We've learned from our national and international icon. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for that. And how true is this phrase at the end? Because I always say to the children that if you want to tell someone you love them, you're not going to say it in English, and you rather say it in the language that you're speaking. You know, for example, they'll say it in Afrikaans if they're Afrikaans speaking. Because there's no feeling when it comes to those words. And I think God's very interesting. And like I said, that let us ask questions, but then department promise us that you won't give it by Thursday. We don't want to come to next week's meeting and then you become fed up with us because people are going to take you on. And then this will need another follow-up. This won't be the last. This will need another follow-up. I'm speaking to Honorable Lottie. Normally, last year we said two, but this year we speak about three. And we end with Honorable De Corvo, then we start with Honorable Mashishi, and we end with Honorable Mushwana. You may start.
Thank you, Jefferson. I don't really have questions. I would just like to say that I'm extremely excited about this. As you said, it is long overdue. It is just a pity that we will have to wait till 2025 to have our learners fully conversant in an African language. I think that's the pity of this whole process. So I think business really receives the necessary attention that it deserves and that it shouldn't fall away somewhere along the side. But I'm also excited in the sense that this will mean a revival for the African language departments at universities, because that's been a major problem for many years. And I do hope that the students through Vincent Lashaka Bursary will grab the opportunity to make their contribution. So thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. I share my colleague's excitement. I agree entirely that this, as Mr. Wedi said, is long overdue and is very, very welcome. I'm just interested in the process this year. Today is the 11th of June, so not much of the year left, actually. Now, the draft policy will be released for public comment. Comment will then be obtained, and then there will be a final policy. Only once you have the final policy, I presume, can you actually go ahead and do the implementation. So the development of your LPSM, that sort of thing, I'm not quite sure what your timeline is for the rest of the year. Linking with it, it concerns me when you say the schools tell us or the provinces tell us they've got enough teachers. We don't have enough language teachers in our schools. Why is Mick Taylor finding that by the end of the foundation phase, children are not literate if we've got enough language teachers in our schools and competent language teachers? We don't. I find it very difficult to believe that, and I would believe it if it was based on evidence, not if it's based on anecdotes. It's certainly not from provincial, most of the provincial MECs. Let me exclude one. So linked to that, Chairperson, that goes into the planning that must take place this year. The policy, the LPSM, the teachers being in place, etc., for the grade R's and grade 1's to commence next year. So, and for the next 6 months, what I'd like to understand further. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I'm Bogina. Chairman, let me sing from the same hymn.
My brother's
Now, Jefferson, we've all been waiting for this time for the African languages and so forth. But since I say there's somewhere that I'm going to complain to the previous speaker, I'm happy again from what has been presented to Archiepiscopal that the information from the provinces is indicating that they know where the posts are and they do have educators to do it. But I'm a little bit skeptical, Archiepiscopal. I am really, from the experience we have as this portfolio committee, when it comes to that information. But at the same time, I'm happy if ever we can be satisfied and be happy about the information. Most of the time we think about the data that come from the provinces. Sometimes it doesn't talk to what we need. So it's just a bit of cautioning the department is to say, please, can we verify that? I'm not saying the provinces are always coming up with wrong information. No, I'm not saying that. But can we have all those information verified for us that come January, we are not faced with surprises? This is the thing that we all want to see happening, and we don't want any mistakes when it comes to this. So really, for the preparation of TSM and so forth, it relies on this data that's coming up from the province. So it's just that word of caution is to say, please, can you make sure that it is the way that it's happening? Jefferson, with this one, I want to say, I know I might sound a little bit I don't even want to use that one. Okay, let's go to the slide that's on page 60, languages selection for third additional languages. Yes, all those African languages are being listed there, Jefferson. Yeah, that one. All learners are compelled to offer English, yes, this is the first language of learning or whatever. And then all learners will be compelled to offer a second first additional languages. That should be African language from the above provision. We're looking at those above provision. Yes, Chairperson, that is why I say I don't want to sound as if I'm a little bit racist or what. But looking at that list, Chairperson, African is one of them. It is an African language. I don't dispute that. But Chairperson, for me, that slide says what is going to change, because what you've been complaining more about, where's when it goes to those previous, to the F models schools? Indeed, the Afrikaans have been the second language, first additional language in most of those schools, and at the expense of these other languages. What is going to change now, you know? I don't see any change as it's going to be still standing like that. Yes, when it goes to those schools, Afrikaans is going to be the first additional language as it is of now. Besides, I'll accommodate that. So I don't see anything that is going to change. I don't see anything that we are celebrating as of now, unless there's another explanation that we might be getting. Thank you, Jen.
I think what Honorable Dina said, I don't think it's a racist statement. Because you come to our schools, then Afrikaans is going to be the third language. Yes, and English. So I think you might 1, 2, 3, 4, and I know you have to see how I'm going to put number 5 in, because you can pick up problems in the Western Cape too, you know, things like that, and even like the Free State, because they are isiCoza children speaking Afrikaans, so sort out that one for us. Honorable Nikobeni Maluleka, thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. I'm also sharing the same sentiments as my colleague next to me. May I be protected, please?
I'm protecting you from 3 people, 1 registration, 2
ways. Thank you. I was saying I'm sharing the same sentiments as them, that this initiative is really commendable. I'll start with the one that is on the table now. As the acting CPG was explaining, that Mpumalanga is one of the provinces where this is piloted. I just want to explain to you what is really taking place on the ground. The former Model C schools were called English schools
most of them will find that there's 90% black people, 10% white people. That's why it's the introduction of the Nguni languages. And the former modesty schools, which were looked as African schools, that's when you get more white children and very, very few, maybe like 10% of school, black children. And in those schools, these Nguni languages are not introduced. So I just want to check with you, how are you going to do it? Is this going to be compulsory for all schools? Actually, I want to know, how is it going to be rolled out? Is it going to be piloted in certain schools, or all schools compulsory will have to introduce this in grade R and grade 1? The second one, I really appreciate the introduction of South African sign language in these schools. But I'm concerned about the Khoisan language. Is it going to be taken into consideration, even though it's not going to be in all provinces? But there is a province whereby we find these people speaking this language. They have their own registrations now. So my last one is that, what will happen to those who refuse to introduce these languages? Is there any punitive measure or what? Thank you.
Thanks, being the square son and the Nama. Thank you, Putin. Thank you. Honorable
Chair, I feel that now a step is taken to a direction where we will be able to bequeath our cultural heritage to some people who would know what to do with it. Thank you.
Honorable Smiles.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to know from the department, where in the APB of 2013 and 14 can we find this implementation? Because maybe I missed it. I didn't see it in the APB. And if it is not there, what is then the sort of, apart from the Constitution and the other legislative and the schools act, what is then the main impetus for making this announcement and the implementation of it? Chairperson, then the other one is with regard to readiness. And I'm going to be blunt to say, you are not ready, department. You are not ready to implement F here in grade R and grade 1. You have to come back and to convince us that you are ready. I will make an example. I'm concerned about what consensus will be reached in a particular province of the, say, the introduction or the implementation of an African language. My understanding, I may be wrong, my understanding in Mpumalanga, you have African languages which is not dominant. There's like in Eastern Cape, we know Isikosa, and that will be the obvious choice as a sort of a language, African language. But in Mpumalanga, different languages are spoken there. How are we going to reach consensus which is the African language that will be sort of agreed to? Thank you.
I won't speak to that one, Honorable Tiko.
Thank you very much. I want to add my voice to those who are saying this is long overdue. But just to say to a department, when they speak about Limpopo, they think about 2005. If they just go and check a little bit, they'll find that in 1999, a school in the town city of Polokwane introduced this, where an African language became compulsory. Of course, there was a lot of resistance, there were insults, the principal being told by parents, you're bringing the township into town. We brought our children here because we have made enough of township. But it is working. Just to deal also with the issue that I was the principal, by the way.
I want to say
And when the difficulty Dr. Mswaledi was introducing this, he always had something to refer back to. But it's working, because parents are the questions that Honorable Miles is asking. They said, no, we are not speaking people who speak Tshivenda. I said, no, we never said you are going to do speak. We said an African language. And so, learners, if you are in Limpopo, African language would mean Sepedi, Xhosa, and Tshivenda. It's working, but what were the difficulties? The difficulties were that you would have a situation where you can't provide teacher in a class of 5, that would have been an average class size. You would have 3 learners doing Xhosa and maybe 5 doing Tshivenda. And to provide a teacher for that, and the department was not helpful in that, like the parents had to dig from own pocket. And some of them very unwillingly, if I may just add. But also talking about Limpopo, and I know that it's not a problem of basic education really. Maybe it must go back to arts and culture, it must go back to the constitution. Because when we speak of that type of languages, when you speak of Isindebele is not one language. The Isindebele spoken, for example, in Soma Kwandebele, and Isindebele spoken in Zimbiela, Mukopane, Bakanbek, Mashashane, Khaledwaba. It's another Isindebele. But that community is being denied the right that you're talking about. Because just like the Kwi and the Kwe languages, that language is not recognized. But like I say, that I agree with what Tina said about Africa. For us, it was not a problem, because then also then to 3 languages. One as mother tongue, 2 as SAS. But what has happened now, things have been reversed, and I go and I find my little children are still there. They have now dropped Africans. And I said, why did you drop Africans? No, it's post-provisioning. We are told if you want to also do Africans, then you must also be paid. It doesn't help. If we are serious about languages, we can't be pushing another down while we are pushing one up. So I think these are the issues that we should be doing. But like I'm saying, that it can be done. There are teachers there, properly qualified teachers. The only difference being that they were paid by the school government body. The fact that they were paid by the SGB does not mean they were not properly qualified. In fact, some of them highly qualified are no one at a master's degree. In this talk. Thank you.
Honorable Shishi. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also one of the person that the song that has been sung today. So I was not going to ask about the language selection for the learner because I didn't see Xhosa. It's not appearing here. Maybe because I was in the, maybe I'm still, my mind is not here, so for them, we need to forgive me for the one. I don't see people also about color secretary. Because I'm going to say very bad things to you. I think it's very important, that's number one. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And then again, because this presentation, it is well understood. I'm happy that Limpopo has given time for more time for, you said 45 minutes, along that line. I think it's a leading progress. You always see what Limpopo is done. Is doing. So we are always high up there. So Chairperson, I don't have more questions because everything is clear. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Dr. Hanyaho.
Well, Chairperson, I will have to repeat what has been said here because if you do that, people begin to suspect that you copy when you write exams. So let's leave it there. The only thing that I personally would recommend is making this quotation. It's funny, you know, it is the first time, I must be honest, that I see this quotation. And I do read a lot, but I don't know how it escaped me. I like this quotation. it has meaning to all of us, not only African language, but it has meaning to everybody the world over. So I wish you could make it available in one way or another to all our schools. You know, there are many ways in which you can do it, not on paper, maybe on something concrete, so that, you know, we see it when you get into the principal's office, you see these ways, they are very, very meaningful. I think that's all I can say. Maybe just one small thing. You know, somewhere during the apartheid era, I think it's maybe the question of apartheid there. During the apartheid era, we had an old man in Limpopo, an educationist, Mr. Madiba, or Dr. Madiba. Yeah, Dr. Madiba. M.G. Madiba. Yeah. And he was for this. And as he says, once you come up with something, you know, that people doubt, they begin to give you names. So you also have to go through that. If you speak of, you know, using your own language in education, then it means you are supporting, you know, apartheid, you are supporting Bantu education. I think during that time it was when you were saying it's Bantu education. Now, I'm happy today you are here, you are supporting Bantu education. So I don't know. I don't know. But otherwise, ma'am, the only thing to sum up everything here is think about this quotation. Think about it. Do something very, very decent about it. Let it reach everybody. Thank you.
Dr. Hanako, we're not seeing from the same sheet there. With that last one you said, of course we moved away. Honorable Mishwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a comment, actually, an appreciation on this language education policy, the issue of multilingualism. I mean, most of the time we tell the department they're not doing and these practices, that if something is done correctly, we need to applaud them. And we are glad that you are taking that together with the sign language. And perhaps it will be necessary sometimes for us to do inspection in local to check where this is really implemented. Because I know, maybe I can give you some starting point to say that in less schools, they do learn and debate. So at least people are taking this very seriously, and this
the country will never be the same. Thank you. Thanks a lot. We're just going over to Ms. Mawere, just to round off, but like I said, it's going to hand over to our education chairperson after you, that we will have another meeting on this. Now, just to follow up.
No, Chairperson, I honestly don't have much to say. Just to say that we are eternally grateful to the caution, the sound advice that we always get from these two committees. I can assure this committee, this meeting, not suggesting that there won't be problems, but we will deal with all the problems that we encounter on the way to implementing this policy. We are woefully aware of the fact that we need to keep our eyes on the ball and make sure that we even better prepared, Mr. Smiles. I'll always remember you when we seem to slack and not adhering to time frames that have been given to us. And that I value very much. And I think that's all that I can say. Thank you very much for your comments, and including those that are saying, be careful, what about this one? Have you thought through it properly? We'll go back, reflect, and make sure that. And what I can propose is that we should probably maybe come back, maybe towards the end of the year, so that we come and really put to rest in terms of our real state of readiness. And that time will come with figures and everything. We'll try to get our provincial colleagues also to be present when we'll be saying to you, the system is ready to implement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Malala. Hi, Chair.
Lunchtime, five minutes past one. We should appreciate the thoughtful contributions of honorable members and officials from the departments. And we trust that all this will be taken forward to ensure that we improve the state of education. situation in the country and enhance indigenous languages in the provisioning of education in our country. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. I'd like to thank the officials from High and Basic Education for their input, and we are closing the meeting now. Thank you.